Pezzi?
Here.
Councilmember Hanson?
Here.
Councilmember Ferria?
Here.
Councilmember Engel?
Here.
Councilmember Moxley?
Here.
Councilmember Herman? Councilmember Goodrich?
Here.
All present and counted for. Good job. Okay, next up is public comment period. This is the period where anyone from the audience can come speak. Anything that's on tonight's agenda, anything that you'd like to speak to the council about. So I know I have one person signed up already, so Lucy, you're first. Welcome.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Lucy Morse. I live at 2501 Mountain View Road. And I come before you for the last time as coordinator, not for the last time, but that will be a long time coming probably, but as coordinator of the Ferndale Community Resource Center. My VISTA term of service has ended on Friday, and it is my great pleasure to introduce you to Jenna Hartman, who is the incoming coordinator for the next year. She'll be here until April of 2012. Jenna comes to us from the small town of Beloit, Kansas, and will work closely with the leadership team, including John Mutchler, to firm up the organization's sustainability. She knows small towns, has worked with both the Latino community in Kansas and with Native American populations. She will communicate directly with you and through John Mutchler, who's the council liaison to the leadership team. Over the past 3 months, one of the things I wanted you to know is that we've seen another upsurge in the numbers of people approaching the Resource Center for help or information or for ways to participate in the community. Our average monthly number of visits from January through March 31st was 119, as opposed to about 100 per month for the 100 per month for the last quarter of 2010. So there's been a steady increase in numbers of people who have been approaching us for anything from where can I buy topsoil to help me find a house tonight to live in with my kids. I mean, it runs and everything else in between. I was very surprised about the request for topsoil. I also wanted to introduce Debbie Covert-Boltz, who is on the leadership team, one of the members of the leadership team, and she's helping to host Jenna until she finds a place to live. So if anybody knows of either somebody who needs somebody to live with them, or if you have an apartment that might be for rent, see Jenna. She's going to be over there at the Resource Center. The other bank, as opposed to the Resource Center, has served an average of 70 families per month for the first quarter, including 125 adults and 256 children, with a total average served of 381 people per month. I want to remind you that each family can visit the other bank once per month for the most basic hygiene articles. It's about 11 different items. One mother commented recently, quote, "The other bank has meant the difference between having and not having the means to keep my house, myself, and my home clean. It is also an enormous self-esteem builder to know that someone cares enough about us to help us with things we wouldn't otherwise be able to buy." She's a single, self-employed house cleaner, and she's a mother of three. And she lives in Ferndale. During the past quarter, the bulk of the coordinator's work, mine, has been to seek grants for continuing and developing programs that support Ferndale individuals and families, and to develop the infrastructure necessary to ensure a smooth transition to our new coordinator, and to continue to challenge, support, and work with a wonderful group of people who are committed to the Resource Center's success and sustainability. Primarily, that means the leadership team, and I know it also means you as a group, and Gary, I always call you the wrong thing. I said governor. Well, Mayor Jensen.
Deal promotion.
I get all flustered here, I guess. As with any small community-based organization, we continue to seek further involvement and support from all sectors of the Ferndale community. We seek financial resources, but more importantly, we will grow as a resource and as a community, dependent on the degree of personal involvement of our community's citizens. I urge each of you to visit the Resource Center. I know some of you have, but not everybody. I urge each of you to visit the Resource Center in the near future. Talk with Jenna Hartman about what we are doing to support your constituents and the greater community, and determine how you can personally be involved. There may be ways that you haven't thought of yet. I know that each of you cares deeply about community well-being, and asking you to come forward in yet another way, since you all serve in many capacities, is difficult for me. But when we seek grants or donors in the community, the depth and breadth of our support means the difference between either finding someone who's willing to support to join you, essentially, and to join everybody in the community, or not. It often makes the difference with grants. Is that my time? I am up. Okay. I deeply appreciate your individual and your collective support for the Resource Center from its inception with Bill Petrasek's work through to the present. It is obvious to anyone who is informed that without the city's formal support of the MOU, the Resource Center would not exist at this point. So but it's due to you all that we exist, and we are very grateful to that. Your ongoing support of our use of the city building at 5694 Second Avenue will enable us to better support the community's well-being. And just personally, it's been an honor to serve as a coordinator of the Resource Center for the past 2 years. I'll miss the daily work, since almost nothing nourishes me more than meeting people on their own terms, talking with them, helping them determine their next steps in their lives. It's tremendously gratifying, and it means a lot to me to have been able to do that. And to develop the Resource Center so that it will be an ongoing thing, I hope that all of you will make an effort to get to know Jenna. It's time for new energy and ideas, which Jenna brings in spades. She really is full of lots of energy and good ideas. And I hope that you will make an effort to get to know her and welcome her to our town. It's essential that the Resource Center not be associated with any one person, and Jenna will help to make that a reality. Every time we have a transition into a new coordinator, a new leader, it reinforces the idea that it's the Resource Center that exists, and that's what's most important. Thank you again for the privilege of working with you all.
I think you have a couple questions. Councilperson Metzler?
Yeah, thank you, Lucy. I got a couple of things I'd like to say. First of all, sometimes it's good when we're not listened to and people ignore our advice. And 15 years ago, my first government responsibility was to serve on a committee to determine what to do with that building there.
Mm-hmm.
I chaired that committee, and our recommendation was to get rid of it, right. Sell it, mm-hmm. Dump it. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that they didn't listen to our recommendation.
Me
we
too.
Kept it.
Me too, because it hasn't
second,
been possible.
Jenna's compensation through VISTA is a modest
stipend.
Modest volunteer stipend. And so the housing need that she has needs to reflect that. And I know there's got to be something affirmed there that would, from a family or someone that would see a vision to help from going. Lastly, thank you. You're an amazing person.
Oh,
you're absolutely amazing because you're not just committed to a community. You're committed to the people of this community. And you've got a big shoes to step into, but you have a lot of help. And, Lucy, you're just an amazing person, and thank you so much for what you've done here.
Well, one thing I want to reinforce is that the leadership team has stepped forward and is taking charge of specific aspects of the resource centers. So Jenna's job is going to be very, very specific. It won't be as diffuse and as distracting as mine was, which was not great for my, the way I work, because I get distracted easily.
Well, John, we can do better than just that.
Did you?
Yes, and we're not done with you yet.
Look,
we know where you live. Go ahead.
And I know where you live. And I hope you all just have a copy.
No, we're just not done with your volunteer service.
No, don't worry. Thank you all.
We have it recorded now. Thanks, Lucy. Okay, any more for the public comment period? Welcome, Pat.
Patrick Alessi, 4825 Alderson Road, Birch Bay. And I wanted to tell you, it's really nice to come up after somebody has given some good, positive news. Because, you know, if I follow someone who's just ripping on you and tangling with you and fighting with you, and I come along and I'm saying you should do this and you should have done that, it just distracts. So it's nice to follow good news. And it's always nice to see kids here, you know, means they're learning. I came to a city council meeting here 7 years ago just because I'm interested. And a fella came in and he was not happy with you. You mostly weren't even there. And you sat down, brought in a mason jar like that, full of water, and set it on the podium and said, look at this water. You know, it's polluted. It shouldn't be polluted. Well, actually, what he was really saying was, this stuff is pouring on my land, and it shouldn't be pouring on my land. That's what he was saying. Now, during the 10 years, more things have happened, more development around them. And Ferndale, you know, I've got this. My mother had a quote that Ferngale really well, and that was sort of a bird that fouls its own nest because Ray has property, and frankly, the developments around it have fouled his potential of being able to do something with it. I was quite happy, you know, because, you know, how things screw up and they work out, you know, Munsell referred to that. So many times things like that happen, and it was rumored that the city was interested in buying Ray's property to use it as part of the drainage system. And I thought, perfect stroke of genius, yes, because that's what they're doing with it now. Only they assessed the value and said, well, there's water sitting on this. It can't be worth much. So I made reference a few weeks ago about running into somebody with your automobile and offering them to pay for it because it was your fault. And then the money that you wanted to pay for that automobile was what it was worth after you smashed it up. So I would love to see something happen there. The world, we know, kids, is imperfect. That's why we have government. Oh, gosh. So I would like to see something positive happen. And, you know, if you think about the time period of 7 years, this guy's had this property and he can't do anything with it. He's got to live a long extra 10 years to make it work. So please work on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? Anyone else for a public comment period?
George Hong, and I had no intention of coming up here tonight in regards to this, but after Ferndale had a meeting and decided to go across the road from my land, I allowed Ferndale to go into my property when it was full of water, which I shouldn't have done. The reason it's full of water is I was told there would be no French drain on the east side of Mountain View Meadows. That never happened. The mayor sent another letter to me about Ram construction. They must have resolved it. They talked to me, and they never resolved nothing. Then they built Summit View and never notified me of any Summit View being built. Everything built there was built to Ferndale standards. And then a comment was made a year ago by Mr. Mel Hansen in front of the council and in front of Doug Conley and him. There's never been no water in Hong's Field. 3 meetings later, Mr. Mel Hansen stands up and says, oh, there's always been water in his field. Then a week ago, he was asked a question. You live up on the Church Road. Where does your water go? His answer was, down in Hong's property. The reason I am blocked is because you worked with me to open up and restore my drainage. Instead, you built a retaining wall halfway down in it behind those apartments. You had me engineer a field that don't belong to me. You engineered the catch basins behind that in my field down, and it never, ever happened. So now you're going down the road, so there's only a couple scenarios left. Either you restore my drainage, which you told a neighbor, for me to get easements and go ahead and do it myself. His name is Ed Peters. And anyway, he resolved that back to me again. The whole thing is, the city is responsible according to their standards, everything that's happened to me. And nothing is being done. You just skip it and go on. I really didn't want to come up here and say this tonight, but it's not going to go on much longer. I would work with anybody. You guys never worked with me. I would Mount View Meadows all to run a ditch around there and anything. I still would be willing to. Mr. Mel Hansen, that's on record what you said.
Then may I speak?
Okay, Councilperson Hansen.
That is not what I said. It's not on record. What I said, someone asked me where the water from my property went, and I said into the city system. Another person in the room said, you mean into George Hong's property? I didn't say that.
So, and somebody else said it anyway.
Somebody else said it, but it wasn't me.
What a nice thing to say.
Well,
but you did say the other two things about never being no water there, and then there's always water there. 3 meetings later, here's a man that was at that meeting that can testify to it right here.
Well, I would take exception to that, but that's okay.
Well, go ahead. Take exception to it. You said it. I was there, too.
Yeah, okay.
The whole thing is to get this resolved. Either buy that upper piece or restore my drainage. I have 6 acres there full of water. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else for the public comment period?
talk about water one more time. It will be in our mayor's happier days. For 20 years, I've been looking for this picture, and it came to me, delivered to my doorstep, courtesy of our local hometown paper. This is a picture of the Ferndale swimming pool. And I looked around there, and I thought I saw the mayor swimming himself there, but it was someone just wearing a white bathing suit cap. there it was. It was swimming. There it is. We had them, folks. We had them. Jim, it was there, and we're working really hard to kind of bring that back, except back then, Gary was the population of the town back in 68, 69.
Ooh, probably about 3008.
Yeah. So we're going to need a little bit bigger one than this, but it was all the wonderful Kiwanis and the Lions Club and all different groups that came together to make that happen. So we'll just keep it quick.
Just one correction. Kiwanis had not been formed in Ferndale when the pool was decommissioned.
Well, I take that back. Okay. I said about it.
Anyone more for the public comment? Okay, Council, I would entertain a motion to pass the consent agenda.
Moved. So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Okay, motion carries. I'd like to add one change to the agenda. I'd like to go E2, the traffic impact study discussion only. So traffic impact study discussion. Staff has brought some handouts for you based on last week's discussion, so we'll pass those out.
How does that differ from G?
Yeah, are we moving G?
How does that replace G?
No, E2.
But what's G then?
What's G then?
We have a new agenda.
Already on there.
Oh, you had it on there. No, wait a minute.
No, there's no.
Underneath, like,
he passed it out here.
Change it. Okay.
So disregard?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do my agenda on Fridays. All right, there you go. Strike that one.
Mayor?
Yeah, we'll do it, G.
Yeah,
that's fine. Councilperson Goodrich?
I'd like to add an item to the agenda to look at a possible motion to reconsider our previous council action item.
Okay, and what is it? Or
it is the council item on the stormwater pond increase of last council meeting.
So we'll do that. You want to go G2?
Yes.
G2. Okay.
Did he vote for it? A motion in the next meeting can be made by a prevailing side member to reconsider an action taken, provided that action has not been substantially implemented.
I believe the council rules procedure require, though, if we're going to ask me the agenda from the council, that we need two other people to...
Prior to a meeting, I believe.
Well...
But he's got my support.
So G2, stormwater fee discussion. Stormwater. G2. Okay. Next up, item C, presentation.
Mr. Mayor?
Yeah.
One other item. Okay. Just for discussion only, I'd like to bring up the possible city location of the aquatic center. Just a discussion.
Okay. Do you want to do it under council reports?
Yeah, we could do that.
Yeah. So we'll do... Okay. Next up, item C, presentation of Port of Bellingham Executive Director, Mr. Charlie Sheldon. Welcome, Mr. Sheldon. Welcome to Ferndale.
Thanks, Mayor. Thank you. So it says presentation is a little intimidating. I think PowerPoints and pictures, and I don't have any of that stuff. So I've been going around since I've been here, in 6 months today, actually, which is kind of hard to believe, talking to the various city councils, just saying hi and introducing myself, and I'll probably do this several times, but I just want to get the opportunity to come before you and introduce myself. I've been here for 6 months as the executive director of the Port of Bellingham. Before that, I was 20 years with the Port of Seattle. I was in charge of rebuilding the airport down there for a few years, and I ran the seaport division down there in the waterfront, and I built a lot of projects. I was a project manager. Give me a hammer and some concrete, and I'm really happy. And if it floats, I'm even happier. Before there, I was in New York with the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey for about 5 years. And before that, I was on the East Coast of the U.S. in the commercial fishing industry as a fisherman and then working in the fish business in a bunch of other ways. So I've got a real bias toward boats and the fish business and seafood stuff. I've been here 6 months. Great staff, a great functioning commission. I've worked for ports where the commission don't get along with each other. It's very hard to get things done, and these guys seem to work pretty well together, and I'm happy to see that. And we have, as you know, a bunch of major issues we're struggling with, and I guess the most important one from, I don't know what the most important one from your perspective is, but from my perspective, probably the most important one and the most critical one right now is the airport expansion and what's going on there. This airport's growing faster than any other airport in Washington, if not in the country, like 20% a year, and we're really racing to keep up with what we need to handle the passengers and get people parked, and it's a real race. Before I got here, the commission took what I thought was a tremendously courageous, they closed the airport down for a month to rebuild the runway, and that really took a lot of courage, and then they had the wettest September probably in the last 50 years. But they still get it done. They get our first-class company to do it, a guy, Icon. They've done a lot of work for us down in Seattle in the airport. They really know what they're doing. So they got that done, and now we're trying to triple the size of the terminal while they operate the airport, and that's really a challenge. So the first section is a building, I guess it's to the south of the current double wides where the airport thing is, and that's about 25,000 square feet. And when that's finished toward the end of this summer, I think everybody will move into there, and then they'll tear out the stuff on the other side and build another twice as big structure there. So in the end, the whole thing is going to be about three times bigger than what people are in today. At the same time, we're expanding the parking as fast as we absolutely can. A couple weekends, we've been run out of parking and put people on the grass. But we're keeping up, and we're redoing the master plan, and we're going to do some work with the general aviation down in the south as well and a bunch of other things. But hopefully most of this construction work will be done in the next couple of years. And I keep telling people that you've got to try to explain to the traveling public to expect a disaster when they come to the airport so they aren't disappointed, because it's not real pleasant when you're, you know, when it's all this construction going on. But I think it's working pretty well. And we keep getting growth. We're kind of actually holding off some growth. I mean, we have the potential to do some east-west service again, which would open up a lot of connections for people up here, and we don't have the capacity for it right now. So the bad news about all this growth is there's more airport operations and there's more noise and there's more traffic, but the good news is there's a lot more connections for people from Whatcom County, so they don't have to go down to SeaTac to make connections. And most of the passengers that come down are from southern D.C., I think, but we've got a lot more local connections now we didn't used to have, so I'm pretty excited about that. I think it's a big part of any port. We're one of the few ports in the country that runs both an airport and a seaport. So that's the biggest, most urgent thing, I think, that I'm dealing with. The other thing then we've got a bunch of marinas, which are doing pretty well, and so on. Then we've got all the property down on the waterfront project, which needs to be cleaned up, and we need to get agreement with the city, and some people have told me it's taking forever, and I kind of agree with them. It's a lot of stuff to do in terms of getting the cleanup done and started, but I think there's going to be some real movement on that. In the next year, we'll start doing some cleanup and demolishing the buildings. We got the ferry terminal, the Alaska Ferry Terminal, as you know, down in Fairhaven, which is a really neat operation. I was in Seattle when the Port of Bellingham stole the business from Seattle, and it was a pretty smart move, I think. And that whole area is really growing, and the shipyard down there is really, really busy. So, you know, we're focusing on the marine trade stuff down the waterfront and the airport expansion. We do some work with the other small cities around the region. I think we've done some work with you and others. We have an operation up in Sumas. We still want to do as much of that as we can as well. It's nice to be here. I know enough to be really stupid, so I won't say any more. I mean, I'm enjoying it, and I'll try to answer any questions. I'm sure you might have a few.
Questions for Charlie. I see Councilperson Ingram first, then Mutchler, then Zimmerman.
Yeah, I'm very glad to meet you, first off. I saw something today that I don't remember seeing around the area before, and it really struck me as like, finally. And that's right on Pacific Highway. There's a new parking service and shuttle service for the airport.
Oh. Well, so let me.
Something called, I think it was called Wiki Tiki or something like
yeah,
that. But
Wiki,
it,
Wiki.
Wiki Wiki? Yeah. But I hadn't seen it because I don't go to Bellingham that often. But we're coming back from there, and it was. That's a huge trend in other areas. And I think that would maybe help to develop a few more of those.
Yeah, that would help. I mean, it's always this tension between you have parking areas right close to the airport, which are most convenient and cost the most, and then people further away offer, you know, I guess some of the hotels out there are also doing long-term parking for people. One of the big changes we had, and amidst all this growth, they opened this Hawaii service, right? And the Hawaii service is, like, wildly successful beyond what anybody thought, I think. And it's Alaska and Allegiant's going to start doing it. So one of the things that happens with the Hawaii service is the people who go to Hawaii go for, like, I don't know, 8 or 10 days, right? They don't go for 3 or 4 days. They go for 10 days. So when people come to park for Hawaii, they're parked for 10 days, not 4 or 5 days. So all of a sudden, you've got cars sitting around a lot longer than before. We sort of like having off-terminal parking, but only to a degree because that's money we don't make. You know, so it's sort of a trade-off.
Councilperson Metzler?
Director Sheldon, nice to see you again. We're the fastest-growing airport in the state. If you say that again, right?
I think we are, yeah.
You think you are. Is that plane count or passenger count? Or
it's passenger count. I don't quote me on this, but I think 3 or 4 years ago we had like 40,000 passengers, or maybe it was 80,000 passengers. This year we're going to be up close to 500,000. You know, it's a lot of increase. And what's also happened a little bit because of this Hawaii service, most people who use this airport, they come to the airport, they fly somewhere, they come back. They don't use this airport as a place to make connections to between flights. But that, as soon as we opened the Hawaii service, people started flying into Bellingham from like Spokane or Portland to get on the Hawaii plane. Well, we don't really have a terminal that's built to handle people hanging out waiting for airplanes. When we get the new terminal, it'll be better. So, yeah, it's been very, very, I think it's great.
Councilperson Zimmerman?
Yeah. Welcome, Mr. Shelton. I had the pleasure of having breakfast here with you here a few weeks ago. What's of all the dollar amounts that this is going to, the expansion is going to happen, how much of it's federal, how much of it's the port money?
By and large, when we do stuff on airport property with the FAA, it's 95% federal and 5% port.
Wow.
But, boy, you're going to get,
that's cool.
I think the terminal building and the runway, it's 95% federal. Now, the parking lots, we don't get FAA money for that. That's kind of our investment, but they make money, so we can pay it off. But the federal participation is really huge in terms of the airport.
Okay. Councilperson Goodrich?
Thank you for coming. I know years ago when I first started flying out of Bellingham, you could just pull in and park, and there was lots of parking, and hop on the plane. It was great. Now the hotel I work at, I do shuttle services on the weekends from our hotel. People can stay and then leave their car at our hotel and go there. I realized when I drove in that one week and there was cars parked on the street going in there. But the biggest complaint I've gotten from people that I picked up there is the baggage claim. And especially on one day I went there and our Horizon and Allegiant came in at the same time. And they were all trying to get their bag. Is that going to be part of the new terminal thing?
Yeah, that's a good question. You're right. As I said earlier, it's kind of a nightmare in a way for people traveling right now. But the new terminal, when it's expanding, I think it's going to have a baggage carousel and a way to feed the bags in so people can pick them up. You don't have to run around and hunt for your bag all piled up. And that should be, I think that'll be done when we get this first section of the building done. I'm not certain about that, but I think it'll be done. Like I say, I had the same problem in SeaTac, the bigger airport. We had the same problem. It just was a nightmare. You had construction barriers and people didn't know where they were going from week to week, and it was kind of crazy. But as soon as people realized it was going to be ugly, then they were okay with it, you know, mostly.
Okay, any more questions for Mr. Sheldon? No?
Thanks very much. Thanks for giving me the time. Thank you.
Dodd, you're just here for moral support.
I'm taking notes in my head.
See you tomorrow morning. Okay, next up is the public hearing on the residential height revisions. Director Burnett.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, Council. Last year at about this time, we came before you, public hearing to increase residential height limits in the RS zones from 28 feet to 32 feet. They'd been at 28 feet probably since the zoning and the height restriction was first installed back in the late 60s or 70s. At that time, last year, the City Council voted to approve that increase from 28 feet to 32 feet, but in their directive, in their motion, they also stated, and I'm quoting, direct the Planning Commission to formulate an updating to our zoning that would allow future developments, long plats, to build up to 35 feet. The matter was taken up by the Planning Commission, which considered an increase in height from 32 feet up to 35 feet for new lots created after the effective date of the ordinance. The Planning Commission determined after the public hearing that they would recommend that it be denied, primarily because there was not a demonstrable evidence, they felt, that showed that there was a market or a demand to increase from 32 feet to 35 feet. The Planning Commission also suggested that there may be issues wherein a 35-foot home was located in close proximity to a home with a smaller height. The Planning Commission also indicated that, and I've lost it now, but that they, I remembered it, that their primary mission, or at least one of the individual planning commissioners, Commissioner Cole, that her main purpose was making sure that existing residents were protected rather than designing a code or a height increase that would be for the benefit of as yet unknown citizens or unknown heights. We did receive some public comments during the Planning Commission meeting from the Building Industry Association, as well as David Barrett, who is a local architect who I believe you've spoken to. Both parties were in favor of the proposed height increase because they felt it would provide more flexibility to both the development community and potential homeowners, especially those homeowners who wish to have a larger, higher house. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions you may have. If you would like, and if the conversation goes in this way, I do have a couple of sheets that I'd like to hand out, one of which I will talk about right now, actually. How do we measure height? And I will just go ahead and hand these out. How do we measure height? It's an important discussion to have just because it can vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. And it's not subject to change tonight as far as what the calculation is. We measure height, and I'm quoting, means the vertical distance from the highest adjoining natural or undisturbed ground surface within a 5-foot horizontal distance of the exterior wall of the building to the highest point on the coping of a flat roof or the highest ridge of a pitch or hip roof. So if you're on a flat lot, the measurement is very straightforward. You measure out 5 feet from that flat lot, and you go up 35 feet to the peak of the roof, and there you go. On a sloped lot, which I show here, you take the measurement from the highest adjoining 5-foot surface and then measure up 32 or possibly 35 feet to the peak there. On the downslope, you may actually result in a house that, again, from that downslope property, could be 40, 50 feet in height. And you see that, Ferndale's not a flat community, you see that in a lot of neighborhoods where there are slopes, where you have a fairly steep wall or foundation, and then only then you start to have those two stories there. So I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
So first one, Councilperson Metzler.
Thank you, Yori. I appreciate your work on this. This has been before council loosely or more directly for the last year, and the Planning Commission kind of twice now when the Planning Commission went from 28 to 32. Has there been any public comment or any letters from the public to the city or to Planning Commission or council speaking against this change from 32 to 35?
There have been no comments written or verbal against the proposal.
Councilman Zimmerman?
Yeah. I was just kind of with the direction that I think the city's taking. I mean, we've got our boundaries, and to be able to grow up versus spread out, you know, I'm in favor of just jumping ahead and saying, hey, 35 feet, that's a good number. Because when you're building, now you got potentially a three-story building, which is, you know, for large families and for a point of view. That, yeah, and the idea that can be converted into a duplex at some point in time, or also you're minimizing your footprint on the lot, and there's a lot of situations, especially now that we're the Fisher's Chamber boomers, that you're going to have, you know, in-laws or something. So it just gives you a lot more flexibility, I would think. That, and it's just, what, 3 feet from 32 to 35? I just, from a material standpoint, in construction, your framing, it makes a lot of sense.
More questions from Councilperson Goodrich?
If I understand what I was reading, that this only is going to apply to new plats. It's not going to apply citywide.
This would apply to new lots created after the effective date of the ordinance. So a lot, the way that you create lots is generally either through the short plat process, which is four or fewer lots, or the long plat process, which is five or more lots. The reason why we did not propose, or the reason why I did not put in here something that said only short plats, was because that would offer more ability to game the system, where that would invite folks, in order to exempt themselves from the ordinance, to just apply for four lots at a time or do 2 4-lot short plats. So it would be all lots created after the effective date of the ordinance as proposed.
Why not any previously? Because we have a lot of lots that are sitting out there empty now that under this, to me, that they would already be excluded. And if we have, a 1,000 lots that are buildable out there, we're just excluding 1,000 lots from this?
And I believe, and the council can probably provide a little bit more direction on possibly why the background of that motion was concern about compatibility with adjacent properties, wherein you could have a vacant lot within an existing subdivision and concerned that that vacant lot could be 35 feet compared to 28 feet just a year ago.
Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah. Councilmember Goodrich, I think it was, it's not a nice term, but I think it was kind of a political decision to pass the ordinance, was that there was feeling on some council members and feelings that I certainly respect that existing neighborhoods might be uncomfortable with a larger home. Some might not, and so in order to move it forward, it seemed prudent to exempt existing lots.
I'll speak on that a second because I've spoken on it before. Certain neighborhoods on hillsides have covenants that are really not enforceable, and typically the covenant would read, your roof line should be of the ability to blend with the rest of your neighborhood. And so you have a lot on a hillside that was built with 28 feet. Now, the lot in front, it was built, platted, with a 28-foot length. Now, all of a sudden, you're going up 7 feet. So you're going, it was 28, now you're going to 35. You have a potential for a completely blocking view. Now, I know council didn't want to talk about trees. To someone that has a view, the fact that you allow someone to completely block my view, I think is not appropriate. You're changing the look of an existing neighborhood. So if you've never had a view, or you think everyone has a view, doesn't deserve that view, I guess you can have that opinion. Okay, I'll go next person just up. I think Lloyd was next.
A point on yours, just, I mean, the covenants aren't enforceable. That's pretty serious.
But they're too big.
Too big.
Yeah, they're too big. Because they don't do actual measurements. The covenant, typically on Church Road, says the height of the existing neighborhood. Okay. Well, what is the existing?
So that might be yours, but I mean other.
No, that whole hillside's about the same covenant.
Yeah, I mean, I could see other, like Grell Park and other stuff like that. Maybe the newer subdivisions, you know, from Vista Ridge. I mean, I think those covenants are pretty tight on what they do and say. So.
Councilperson Hans goes first, then Feria.
I'm a little bit bothered by short plats because we have a lot of lots in the community that are large enough lots where the lot can be split up, where a single lot can be split off. And if I just heard correctly, a house that was built under the 28-foot covenant, or it's not a covenant, but building height, that there can be a short plat next door that would allow a 35-foot. So it's new lots inside the, yet in plats that are already developed that have lots that are outlined, those are going to be limited to 32. I'm a little uncomfortable with that, that throughout the community we're going to have 35-foot houses wherever somebody can short plat a lot off. It's going to take years, but that is in essence what will happen.
Staff response?
As far as the possibility of someone being able to create a short plat with 35-foot lots, as written, that's what could potentially result. It would be a new lot.
Councilor Safaria?
A few comments on this. I remember when we first started talking about this and we were at the 28 and wanted to go up, you know, it was brought up to want to go up to 35, and I wasn't in support of that and felt at the time that it was coming to a middle ground, going with 32. I thought, okay, well, it's only a couple of feet, you know, I can do that. And I was originally in support of the idea of allowing the 35-foot height limit for new developments, thinking, okay, let's not touch the current developments, but if you're going to new developments, you know, up away, well, why not allow people to go to that height? And then Commissioner Cole came and spoke at our committee meeting, and I thought she made a wonderful point. You know, I agree that our ultimate responsibility is to the current citizens of Ferndale. And with keeping that in mind, if you went with, I mean, this changes it even more so, like Mel said, short plats could be in the middle almost of an existing development. But you could have a new development that is going to be right next to existing development. So how is that any different of suddenly allowing all these houses to go up to 35 next to people who might have built with a view in mind or might have built thinking there's a certain, you know, character to those homes? So with that, I'm not in support of this. You know, I want to continue to be supportive of the rights of our current residents, and so I would not be in support of going up to 35.
Councilperson Goodrich?
Kind of in response to that, I brought it up at a committee meeting. What's the difference between a brand-new two-story house going in next door to a one-story house? You can do that now. You could have a whole area of one-story houses in one lot in the middle there that hasn't been built on, and somebody could put a two-story house there up to 32 feet. You know, the argument was not fair to the other households or whatever, like Commissioner Cole said. That's the reality of today. And so to say, gee, we have an area of 28-foot houses or 32-foot houses, and now somebody wants to build a 35-foot house, to me, 3 or 4 feet versus a whole story. You know, and I even asked Yori, and I think that's probably why this second side here is, well, how big can somebody build on a lot? You know, because you know, I know Councilmember Ingram brought up the McMansion things at one time and allowing those into it. And it's amazing how big a house you can currently build on a piece of property in an existing neighborhood. So I don't know how that logic plays into it when you can already build big things in an existing neighborhood. So unless somebody has an explanation for that, I can't see what the going to the extra couple more feet would cause.
Councilperson Ingram, next.
Well, one of the things it would cause in our old neighborhood, where we just moved from, there are 3 homes that have been there for a great number of years, and they're on 5-acre parcels. If they chose to do so, and they split that 5 acres into 4 1-acre plats, 4 1-acre lots plus their own reduced down to 1 acre, with a short plat allowing 35 feet, they could throw four houses on there at 35 feet, and they would totally destroy the value of the neighborhood. Because everybody that's behind them, all that beautiful view of Mount Baker and the hills is gone. Because those are all, even the two-story houses in there are built 28 feet. So it's like, you know, completely destroy the neighborhood. And the value of quality of life for the people that own those existing houses just went down the toilet. No longer can they sit out on that deck and enjoy a barbecue in the afternoon and look at Mount Baker and the sisters and go, wow, this is great. Because they could, that could happen to them. I don't like the short plant being involved in this because I don't, we didn't discuss that. When we discussed this in committee, if I remember right, and Sam can throw rocks at me if I'm wrong, but we talked only about long plants because that's what the direction was of the original motion. It was to go back and direct the Planning Commission to formulate an update of our zoning that will allow future developments, long plats, to build up to 35 feet. And I don't know why we threw short plats into it. Because that's exactly what we've been arguing against, is the fact that you can split a lot. And you can throw up a couple of houses on a split lot. And just wipe everything in the neighborhood out.
Okay, I'm going to go, Councilperson Mutchler, Hanson, and Ferrier, then I'll stop and we'll open up for public comment on the public hearing. So, Councilperson Mutchler.
Yeah, I have to agree with Councilmember Ingram. As you know, I would have been comfortable across the board, but I support, as a matter of probably just wisdom from this council, that short plats be excluded. And I tried to listen earlier to your comments, and I recall the director being very clear to just limit this to long plats. There's no perfect way, but eliminating short plats takes care of these little pieces of land that might be tucked in somewhere within the city that might block somebody's views. So would you explain again? I didn't quite understand where you felt it the staff felt it necessary to make that change from what the council directed and also what the commission sent to us without recommendation, but they sent it to us in the previous form.
The proposal for lots created after the effective date has been the proposal that the Planning Commission considered and then was brought to committee. And so that did include both the long plats and the short plats. The reasoning behind it was because a long plat can be created on an acre piece of property, a half acre piece of property. The thinking behind it was that we cannot necessarily look at a piece of property in all cases and say a long plat can't go on there. It can only be a short plat that goes on that location. However, what the proposal does do as proposed and what the SEPA was designed to do was to cast out large enough bookends to provide the council some leeway where if the proposal had been only for one or the other, the council wouldn't be able to change their mind. This way you do have some latitude, but staff would encourage you to remember that by saying that short plats would be excluded, that does not necessarily protect any one piece of property from having properties that were 35 feet immediately adjacent. So that piece of property that you might all be thinking about in your mind as this will protect this from having 35-foot height limits, that's not necessarily the case. We would need to look at each individual one and say, what's the minimum lot size that can be created in that zone? And really, if it's anything less than two-thirds of an acre, they could put a long plat in there.
Short plat.
Long plat.
About two-thirds of an acre?
Two-thirds of an acre gets you about 30,000 square feet, maybe a little bit more than that, 6,500 square feet. Times five, that gets you 32,500. 32,500 would be the minimum that you could get a long plat.
Seems to me like what council was concerned about was a short plat of two or three lots, having one home or two home at 35 feet in this sea of 28 feet, 32 feet would look kind of peculiar. Granted, you could have a long plat with 30 lots and only one home decides to build a 35, but the odds are you'd have some consistency and conformity of building there. my sense is that change, and it seems like a pretty significant change in what council direction was to the Planning Commission. I'm not sure what the vote will be. It could be a deal killer on this, though. I don't know.
Councilperson Hansen is next.
Gordon, have there been, how long have we been at 32 feet? A year or so?
About a year. I think a little bit less. I think
have we had any significant requests come across that would ask to go to 35 feet or people that weren't? Because I know many other communities in the county are at 35 feet. Have we had a lot of requests for 35 feet or any?
To the best of my knowledge, we have had none, but that might be partly because they've looked at the rules and seen.
So we may be fixing something that's not hasn't been a problem.
That was the Planning Commission's belief.
So why are we doing that?
Customers Perry is next.
How long have we been at 28 feet? How long were we at 28 feet? Right? Okay.
40 years.
Okay. So for 40 years, we were at 28 feet, and that wasn't a problem. You know, and then you inch it up to 32, and then, oh, what's 35? It's three more feet. And then before you know it, you have 45 feet homes because it's just a few more. And that's what they're doing in other places. So why don't we just go ahead and do that? You know, I mean, it's been working fine in Ferndale. I don't see a need. You know, we've already bumped it up to the 32. I don't see a need to change it from there.
Councilperson Mutcher, then Zimmerman? Or did you have your hand up? Or?
I thought we were looking to the public.
I'm a public.
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. Yeah, you're exactly correct. I'll open up for public comment. Does anyone wish to come forward and speak on the public comment period on this? One person. Okay. Before you speak, because the one person wanted to talk, now I have to read this. Very good, though. We applaud students. A public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in the decision-making process. If you intend to speak, it's necessary to sign up in the sign-up sheet. That's okay. Written comments will also be submitted to the city clerk prior to beginning the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Proceed to the speaker's rostrum microphone. Clearly state your name and address if you are speaking as a representative for another person or organization. So state whether you are a proponent, opponent, or neither. Limit your comments 3 minutes after all comments heard. If you have something to add that has not already been stated at the discretion of the mayor, you may give an additional 2 minutes. There will be no demonstration during or at the conclusion of anyone's presentation. During the public testimony period, the public hearing, the council staff and audience will remain silent. After your presentation, council members may wish to ask you questions. At last for a spoken, the hearing will be closed and the council will enter the regular session. Now you may come forward. Way to go. She gets extra credit for this.
Hello, I'm Tess Benson. I'm a junior at Ferndale High School. And I'm going to make this quick because I don't want to waste too much time. It's not really very important. But I just wanted to say that we live in a beautiful place. Like, we have the most amazing views. And I know, like, half of us here have views of Mount Baker. And I just wanted to say that I think it is really important to people when they have that perfect view. And some of the things that, you know, I was listening to, I think it would really tear a lot of families, like, make them super upset. I know one family had that happen, and a big house was built in front of their house, and it was up on a hill, and they were down low or something, and I can't really remember how it went. But their view of Mount Baker was completely taken away. And I just think that it is very important for people to have their view that they had planned when they first built or bought their house. So that's all I have to say. Oh.
Questions? Councilperson Metzler?
Thank you, Ms. Benson, for coming today. But and I feel bad. I've lost two views, and I've built two homes. One because, actually, I have had a two-story home, and a one-story home went in front of me that blocked my view, ironically enough. The other one has to do with a tree, but that's life. But I want to just point out that your friend's problem occurred before we even went to 32 feet. So these things happen, sadly, regardless of whether we're at 28 or 35 feet.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Mayor, are you going to be the one that contacts Mr. Brown to make sure she gets that extra credit?
I'm going to.
Okay, good.
Is it Scott? So Scott? Yeah. Okay, anyone more else for the public comment period? Seeing none. Okay, I'll close the public hearing portion. Councilperson Mutchler.
I'd like to make a motion based on the original directive by council that the City of Ferndale update its height ordinance on residential for only long flats that are new to go to 35 feet.
I'll second that.
Okay, we move a second. Further discussion on that motion? Councilor Zimmerman?
You know, if we look back and we talk about 40 years ago, however this all started, a lot of it was involved, some of these decisions, these numbers were based on public safety because the ladders on the fire trucks would only go up so high. Well, in the last few years, now we have a 100-foot ladder, so that's one of the things that also helped us reconsider the height limitations on, lift the height limitations in the downtown core area. So that's just a little historical oddity.
Boy, not on residential. Our fire department has always been able to go up to 35 on residential. But okay. Yeah, that would have been a factor. I would suspect that 28 was based, when it originally started, people had 8-foot ceilings.
Yeah.
The code was 8-foot.
Yeah.
The difference probably changed when people decided 10-foot ceilings were better. But yeah, the fire department always had enough to go higher. So good. Further discussion, Councilperson Mutchler, then Goodrich.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to make just 2 points in favor of this proposed ordinance change. One is the ability of homes to be built now with attic space. And we are allowing much smaller lots, 6,500-foot lots, but you can only have, I don't know, 40% footprint, something like that, whatever it is. And so this would allow a 2,500 or 2,800 or even a 3,200-foot home when you allow someone to put that third story in an attic. It's not a three-story home plus an attic. It's generally in the attic, but you have to be able to have a reasonable pitch for that. And it can be done, and it's a great way to decrease the amount of footprint on the ground, which we've talked a little bit here about impervious surfaces. That's less impervious surfaces. In other words, a three-story house has less ground cover than a same house that's same square footage as one story. You're taking up a wider space with a one-story home trying to get the same square footage of living space. The last thing that we haven't talked about very much is I, for one, would love to see some, I heard the phrase McMansion mentioned a few times, which kind of implies a cookie-cutter thing, and mansions, whatever they are, tend to be different. They tend to be creative. They tend to be new, and they tend to be, frankly, people that make more money than I make as a council member. And I like to see Ferndale say we're open to business in some new neighborhoods of people who might bring in some larger homes. They get assessed at a higher value. The city collects some higher property taxes. The city gains some citizens, perhaps, that are able to write those million-dollar checks for libraries and things like that. And I'd love to see stuff like that. I may never have a home like that, but I'd love to see those types of homes not block somebody's view, but as we're developing towards the west end of the places and new plots, maybe some of those types of neighborhoods might start going in. And that's all I have.
Councilperson Goodrich, then Hanson.
I'll pass.
Councilperson Hanson.
If the figures are correct, we have approximately 1,000 lots available for building right now, plots that have already been filed and so forth. And if this is correct, this would be a new long plats, not existing long plats.
It would be lots created after the effective date of the ordinance.
No, that's not what the motion
was. The motion was for long plats.
For long plats created after the effective date.
New long plats. Okay.
So nothing that exists today, you can go 35.
Like your point of short plat.
Well, no, I understand. I guess the point, I'm not going to support this at this time because I don't think there's a problem. I would point out that if we build a reasonable number of homes, if we get 100 homes a year, right now we're slightly below that, but we'll probably go above that, hopefully, in the near future. Let's say we've got a 5 to 7 year inventory. Nothing, people are not going to do new long plats at this point in time for at least 5 to 7 years. I shouldn't say that. There may be somebody that wants to take a chance at that. Could happen. There's no question about it, but highly, not very likely. I think we're trying to solve a problem that we don't have.
Councilperson Ingram and then Mutchler.
Yeah, just a little historical background. The term McMansion, I'm probably the one that uses that the most, was coined by a journalist for the San Francisco Chronicle back in the early 70s and was referring to development in the city of Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz passed one of the toughest building ordinances in the world. It's a lottery system. They draw 25 cards a year out of a drum, and you get to build. You got to pay all your fees up front. But unlimited remodel. So what the trend was that somebody would buy an old home, they'd bulldoze everything but the front wall of the house, and literally cookie cutter stamp these 7,500 to 8,500 square foot mansions behind that old facade. And it was perfectly legal. And that term was coined to kind of reference that type of a building habit.
Just so you know where it came.
Councilperson Metzler?
So we have a part of Ferndale, I think it's west, that zone is it 11.5 or 12.5? Would you remind me, please?
10.5,
which is a pretty, they could be larger than that. That's the minimum size. And I appreciate what Councilmember Hansen saying. I don't know what's out there. I'm not planning to build anything, but I really would like to see Ferndale say we're willing to do something like that. It would obviously be something new, something different. And I'd say let the market, let the builders, let the property owners decide these things, not the city. And the 35-foot standard is not abnormal. It is pretty much the standard height in Whatcom and Skagit County with a few exceptions. It's not like we're going past anybody. In fact, Bellingham is much higher since they are measuring, as we've heard, from the center of the gable. I mean, they're conceivably 45, 50 feet. Not that they are, but they can go. I say it, maybe the demand is not there, but allow the demand to happen.
Councilperson Goodrich? Do you know, Yori, if we have any plats out there that are not developed at all? They just gone in and put the streets in, and but there's no building?
Yeah. We have kind of two versions of that. The quick answer is yes. The longer answer is we have a variety of plats that are still in the preliminary plat stage where they've applied. In some cases, they've put in infrastructure. In some cases, they haven't. But those lots have not been legally recorded or created yet. Probably a good percentage of the 1,000 potential lots that are out there are in that stage. We don't know if they'll be finished or not. There's another somewhat smaller percentage. Heron Crest is a good example, close to Larson's Church Hill Estates, which has been developed and the lots have been created, but then the properties have not yet been developed. Heron's Crest would not be subject to this 35-foot, in my interpretation, because those are already created. A preliminary plat such as Blomquist Heights, which is west of the elementary school there on Thornton, has not yet had final plat approval. Thus, the lots have not been created. Thus, if the property owners wish to move forward, they could potentially be subject to 35 feet, in my interpretation.
Would it be an issue or difficult to do? And I'm thinking about possibly amending the motion, if possible, to include the plats that aren't already developed. Or, I mean, it sounds like some of them already fall into that one. If they only had the preliminary, that they would qualify for the 35 feet. But if we have ones out there, or is that enough to even
make a contingent on final plat? You can't build until final plat.
Exactly.
That way all of the preliminary plats are eliminated, so they could go ahead and do whatever they want. If you wanted to make it contingent on something, make it contingent on final plat. Therefore, if they're not already at final plat, they could go to 35 feet. If they are at final plat, they would be limited to 35 feet. So final plat has to be approved here.
Yeah, I believe that's the intention of what...
Exactly. It would be extremely difficult to go back and, for instance, say Heron Crest, which has not been developed, but the lots have been created, to say you were created in 2008, but Skyview, which was created in 2009, is not subject just because Skyview already has some houses on there. I would strongly encourage you, if you want to move in the direction to say long plats with lots created after the effective date, or long plats created after the effective date.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, is if Councilmember Hansen's thing, or I don't know if it was in the original motion or not, to say final plat, or were you saying long plat?
When the director talked about lots created, the vehicle through which you create lots is the final plat. Until you have final plat, you don't have lots.
Do we need to put that language in the thing?
It's in it now. Oh, okay. Because it talks about lots created after a certain date.
Lots created.
No, it's a different topic. I wanted to bring this up, and I bring it up with some hesitation only because I've gone through this in other cities. In some ways, what I'm hearing is that there's an issue, maybe not around 32 and 35, but an issue around having views block. I mean, because a long plat, short plat, 32, 35, all of those combinations and permutations could theoretically block someone's view. We've even heard that a shorter house, given the topography, could block it. And I bring it up reluctantly only because it's a big topic, but I'm not sure whether Ferndale is now to the point where having a view protection ordinance or having some discussions with the Planning Commission on view protection, not so much trees but other structures, is maybe time, especially when we talk about infill. If you did want, again, I don't want to complicate this too much, but if you did want to go down the path of view protection, then in a lot of ways it doesn't matter if it's a short plat, doesn't matter if it's a long plat, doesn't matter if it's an infill lot or it's a brand new subdivision. If we have regulations defining view and setting out the parameters for what is a view and what it might be for protection given the siting of a new home, that could solve the problem of 32, 35, 40, whatever, 28. But again, it's a big topic. Other cities have done it, so there's a lot of examples out there of how you measure views and what are views and what aren't views and what's protected and what isn't. But it's something that we might want to consider regardless of the direction you go tonight.
Councilperson Malpezzi?
You're in the current rules. Can an applicant have a variance to go higher than 32?
Variances are typically only granted if they can show that they have a hardship that they didn't create themselves, and it can't usually be a financial hardship. It's usually more, I can't fit even a small house on my property because of wetlands or setbacks, not I can't view Mount Baker sort of a variance. It also has to be something that anyone in a similar situation would have the reasonable expectation of being granted the same variance.
Is the jump from 32 to 35 is the main reason for that? You can build three stories?
That would be my understanding, is that you could have that increased flexibility. Depending on the lot, you can get three stories now, but on the flatter lots, it's more difficult to get up to the three stories at 28 or 32 feet.
And is there some other process besides the variance that we could use on a case-by-case basis to approve going to 35, more of the exception, not the rule?
In the entire realm of zoning, there might be a possibility, but we haven't looked at that.
Councilperson Zimmerman?
Oh, I was going to say, if we're getting to the area, if we're limiting the height because of the view aspect of it, I planted some trees 13 years ago. They were these new super firs. They're approaching 55 feet tall. And so we can do all we want with restricting someone's building a house, but who's to prevent them from planting these species of trees? And that's just 13 years. Imagine what it would be in 20 years or 40 years. You know, we're supposed to be Tree City USA, but that's just one of the things. I'm all for people being able to negotiate and work with their neighbors and do trimmings or purchase that tree from him, whatever he wants to do, but I mean, that's kind of between the neighbors and everything else. So,
yeah, that works really well. Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, you know, I can even suggest that the 35-foot home, and by the way, to answer Councilmember Malpezzi's, I've penciled it out. Those 3 feet really help that attic space if you want those higher ceilings downstairs and those kinds of things. But a developer, say, somebody like a John Freeberg, who's got 40 beautiful acres up on the hill, he can set his plat so that the smaller single-story homes are in the front, and then you've got maybe that row of 20, 26, 28-foot homes in the middle, and you've got taller homes in the back with the upstairs looking out over. You're gaining some views with thoughtful development. And the last thing I want to say is a comment from staff report that I thought was helpful. From staff's perspective, this is from our notes, the issue of incompatibility is somewhat moot. A variety of architecture, land uses, colors, densities, etc., make for a more vibrant, visually interesting community, unquote.
Mr. Zimmerman? Well, since his name was mentioned, John Friebert's back there. John, one of those projects you were talking about, zero lot line townhomes, would they fall in that height? No? Thank you.
Two points. The townhomes, you will be having the opportunity to look at those probably in the next month or so in the RM1.5 zone, where those are going to be specifically addressed. The other thing, and I don't know whether or not staff can clarify a little bit of what the motion may have been.
Probably a good time to do that.
Wherein a motion could be 32 feet on parcels created prior to the effective date of the ordinance, 35 feet on lots created through the long plat process on or after the effective date. That way it would...
That's fine with me. That conveys what I had intended.
Okay, I think we've discussed this one to death. Okay, and everyone understands the motion? So you vote favor or denial of the motion. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Four. All opposed?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, so 4-3. Passes 4-3.
Thank you, Council, and thank you, Director.
Okay, next up, presentation Main Street Phase 1.
And I've got a PowerPoint presentation, so
we'll be tied.
Moving time.
Oh. You're
going to
have to run for a
little bit. Yeah, you're a little skinny. You had a cell phone on your mind.
Oh, I want to keep your eyes low like your cats do.
Doesn't look very proportionate either. That's not 65, 100. It's more like 35, 40.
Don't fly them yet. Okay, but...
The screen is on a white sheet.
Yeah, let's get it back together here.
Jesus.
Oh my god. That fir tree behind there, that would make it at the top of his arch tower.
You could run a mile.
So that's another 15-20 feet there.
Shampoo up 7 stories.
Yeah.
That tree probably comes out of there because of that.
So it's been a little while since given an update on the...
All right, let's have Katie have the floor.
Since I given an update on the Main Street project, and instead of me rambling on, I thought, well, pictures say 1,000 words, so I figured I'd put some photos together to kind of comment on. So recent work on Main Street includes, if I can figure out the right button, curb gutter and sidewalk. They've done some paving on Main Street. Roadway excavation, there's basically a site distance issue between Sterling and Hamlin, so they've excavated the road there. They've done work on the wall. And there's been asphalt grinding. Plus, then today they started in on railing installation. So first, we'll talk a little bit about curb gutter and sidewalk. Strider subcontractor, Custom Concrete, they finished up the concrete work except for the entryway or the exit from the Bulos property, which is going to get done a little bit later. They finished that up on Friday. Pretty much all of the curb and gutter was installed using a power curbing machine. Megan at the Record Journal took some pretty nice photos of it when it occurred. Makes for pretty fast installation. So here we have a photo of the new curb in place on Main Street. After the curb was installed, they began preparing for sidewalk installation. So what they do is they put down 2 inches of washed rock for the sidewalk over top. when weather's been favorable, it's been kind of iffy lately, they've had a numerous amount of crews working. Here in this photo, you can see that there's two sidewalk crews working in close proximity. During the sidewalk and curb installation, we got some comments from some of the local businesses and were able to put up entrance signs to help direct folks in and out of businesses. Just with the number of cones and the congestion, it makes it kind of a little bit difficult to figure out where you need to go and how to get there, so we tried to help that out by putting entrance signs in. So we got some more photos. The side and sidewalk crews worked two Saturdays in a row. When they ran into some bad weather, it was raining, they weren't able to pour, so they did come in on Saturday and do some work. This is a photo from the second. This is a photo on Main Street looking from Washington towards Hamlin. And they were able to pour this section of the sidewalk all in one day. They got from Washington Street all the way to Hamlin Avenue. No, Sterling, actually. And flag sleeves were installed every 30 feet between 3rd Avenue and Hamlin. So that's you can see him in the guy that's sitting there. He's working on the forms. You can see him sunk into the subgrade in preparation for paving. And this is a photo of them working on the ADA ramp at the southeast corner of Main and 4th.
Katie, can you go back to that photo?
Oh, I hope so.
Right there in the bottom right where the footing of the cement is all crunched up like that.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to repair that before they pave, or are they just going to pave over it, or not that big of an issue? Or?
Yeah, that's been removed. It was removed on Thursday, and they reported on Friday. What happened with that curb machine, in this one case, what it does is a lot of times they leave the grade a little high, and then it's almost got like a rototiller type thing where it takes the excess material and pushes it off to the side. And coming around that radius, it sucks some of the pit run back into the slip form. And so that's what was causing the breakup of the curb. And so that was noticed prior to the paving work that happened, you know, today. And they removed it and replaced it. There was a couple of places where just driving on the curb a little bit before maybe when it was cured, curb cracked, and so had to be removed. And that's done at no cost to the city.
Thank you.
The sidewalk gets a broom finish, so let's take a look at that. There's the newly completed sidewalk between looking from Hamlin to Washington Street, which people are using. Next, we'll talk a little bit about the paving work that's been done. You can see the abrupt lane edge sign. For most of the project, we were able to keep the existing road section there, so they were able to work off the road. They did saw cut it and removed the material, the asphalt and the grade where the new curb is, which leaves left a drop off. So part of that was the paving effort here. It was like the third week in March, they started paving this little section back, and it takes quite a bit of time because it's all done by hand. They're not able to use a paving machine. They'll dump the trucks out using the chute, and then a guy will you can see it coming out of the truck there. They've got two small chutes in the back that they open that up. The truck runs down there. And then you have a guy with a plate compactor running up and down the street. So it's pretty labor intensive. So there's some photos of that. Today they started doing some base lifts of asphalt on the main streets. This is a photo of them paving this morning on 4th Avenue right next to City Hall. So what happens is they deliver the asphalt. It's usually covered to make sure that it stays warm, and then they dump it in the paving machine, and then the paving machine tracks along. Here we've got a photo of the guy on the back. He actually runs runs the machine up or down based on, you know, the depth of asphalt that needs to occur. So he can make adjustments as he goes. So there's a finished section, a base course. Next is roadway excavation. As I mentioned, there was a, for lack of a better term, a hump in the road kind of between Hamlin and Sterling that was excavated out. So when they excavate that out, you can see just in front of the track of the machine there, there's paving or there's fabric. So they lay the fabric down on top of the existing ground, and then they backfill it with pit run. There's a little bit better photo. And once that gets backfilled, then they do some grading with the grader. And they were using this machine. It's pretty small. They were able to grade for sidewalk as well.
I got a question for you. In the area, kind of right where that was, where I think the library, between library and arts house,
mm-hmm.
It seems like the gutter is way higher there than anywhere else. Is that going to have multiple layers of the asphalt in there? Besides, some of them look like they just need one more layer of asphalt and they're done, but that one looks like it's going to need two or three or four.
Yeah, in fact, the in conjunction with shaving the top of the hill down, there's a section, like you said, it looks like the curb is not anymore because they've actually paved it today. But
it still looks,
mm-hmm.
you know, higher than those coming through tonight.
Yeah, you could see the bottom of the curb, which is, 6 inches thick, I believe. Plus then you could see the gravel underneath it. And so that area, not only are you shaving off the high spot, but you're also filling in the lower side of that hill to kind of make a better transition, I guess. Instead of having a hump, you have a slow rise and then...
So they're going to have a couple more layers of asphalt in there than what they put in today.
Yeah, they started doing their pre-leveling work today, which is basically just filling up the area with asphalt. So and they'll continue to do that. So there's a bunch of shots of that. And then we're kind of hoping that they reorganized their schedule to do their roadway excavation in hopes that they could get it paved back in before the weekend, and then Mother Nature had better ideas, so it wasn't very cooperative, and they weren't able to pave it back, but it did get paved back today.
Katie, the drainage on that part where they've taken it down all the way from Sambula's place or Arts place, that's all going to go pretty much down still toward the live to the post office. Then that, then where the drainage was, does it head south under the street to the?
There's a grade break, pretty much at Hamlin. Anything to or near Hamlin to the west goes west, and then anything on the street, kind of on the east side of Hamlin, heads east, and then it ends up in the. The large, we replaced a big culvert that goes under the roadway there. It's a 48-inch culvert that then discharges into, I believe it's Shell Creek. Is it Shell?
Shell Marsh.
Does that go via the corral?
No, the anything west of Hamlin goes through and then, drains towards corral. Anything east of Hamlin goes then, there's a drainage system that runs
into
the parking lot.
The west side, it's going through Corral and into their wetlands first before it goes into the marsh.
It goes through that stormwater facility.
Okay.
Under many areas of the road, a lot of times they'll construct roads and just build over top when you can, because why dig up a perfectly good road section? So here you can actually see the old portion of concrete under the road. And in fact, where they had ground down kind of towards Corral Park, you could actually see an old centerline stripe.
Yeah, I saw that.
So there's the portion that was in gravel over the weekend, and it's been since paved. So some more work that they've been working on is the wall. Here, workers are filling the, I don't know what they're called specifically. There's a, when they put the forms together, there's a metal rod that holds the two forms, and then it leaves a hole when they pour the wall. So they're filling that in preparation for sandblasting and painting.
Yeah, are we going to do something with that wall? Get, you know, a community, you know, mural up there or something? Because that's just asking to get tagged. Nice gray surface, blank sheet.
That's always an option.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's not going to be me, but keep your gray paint on handy.
Washington gray paint.
Is that supposed to be anti-graffiti paint, wasn't it? Or talked about it one time?
I don't know if it has. I'd have to do some research on that. But it's a pigmented sealer, which is a fancy name for paint. Sanders Painting is the subcontractor that sandblasted and painted the wall. And here's a picture of the wall. We did get a good bit of weather last week. He had a remote temperature sensor, and the wall was reading at 72 degrees, so that was the place to be that day because it wasn't 72 degrees.
Katie, what's the drop between there and there?
The drop?
Yeah, elevation change.
In the wall?
No, in the sidewalk.
It's a 2% cross slope. Is that what you're...
2%? Okay.
2% from the wall to the curb,
right.
But I don't know, no more than 2%. More photos of the wall. Next, we'll talk a little bit about asphalt grinding, which is kind of an interesting process. Gloria Jean was a subcontractor that came in to do that work, and they were here for 2 days. So the machine just goes through. They set the grade based on survey information, and it just mills up the asphalt. Yeah, pretty much. And it doesn't heat up the asphalt before it grinds it. It gets that hot during the process. So here's a photo on their second pass, looking from 3rd Avenue, or from 4th Avenue to 3rd. They're at 3rd. Photo quality isn't very good, but you can see some of the millings. The machine doesn't pick up everything. There's a chute that puts it in the back of the dump truck, and then they haul it off. And so they use this sweeper to pick up the little bits of ground up asphalt that the machine doesn't pick up itself. And that's kind of cool because it's got a scissor lift on it, and then they dump right into the back of the dump truck. There's a couple photos of that. So you've got an operator on the grinder. I'm not sure what the guy in the yellow coat, I think he was watching for maybe grades, but then the guy in the orange, he directs the truck. So he stands underneath the chute all day and directs trucks. So when it's done, you guys have probably driven over Main Street, it's kind of bumpy surface. So a close-up of it. And then you can see up on 3rd Avenue, we ground from pretty much the intersection as you're, you know, traveling to the west. But the eastbound lane, it wasn't ground all the way up to, like, the crosswalk because we were not wanting to damage the traffic signal loops. So that's why that didn't ground. So, like I said, before they begin the grinding process, the surveyors come through and they put cut marks, so that stands for a cut of 17 tenths of a foot. And then after it was ground, our inspector and some of the folks from Strider went through and double-checked and make sure that the grade was accurate with using a string line and a tape measure. So next, like I said, they started in on the railing installation today. Started off by taking down the chain link fence. And then they had to take off the old posts and the sleeves. So here's a photo of the first section of railing going in. And I'm pretty sure they weren't quite done when I left City Hall, but I'm pretty sure that that section of railing's done. I'm assuming that they'll start in on the railing at the tall wall at Hamlin tomorrow. So that's pretty much what's been happening over the last several weeks. Coming up next, continuing on the railing and fencing, there's a chain link fence that's going to go on the Anderson House property, plus then the railing that goes on the tall wall. They'll be continuing with paving as long as the weather's favorable. Tomorrow's activities include, filling up that area that Councilmember Goodrich was asking about, doing the pre-leveling kind of between Sterling and Hamlin. And then if time allows, then they'll drop back and start paving some of the open trenches and back of driveway entrances at the businesses.
When are they going to get the little right-hand turn lane done on 4th and Vista?
That's where the water main broke.
Yeah, we were trying to coordinate work so the guys weren't doing their work and then gumming up work on Main Street, and I'm not sure what the most current.
Yeah, I think they've cracked it and they're waiting for it. They've got a couple bids on the paving. And so they should, same thing, weather. They'll probably take advantage of the first opportunity.
When they cut, they just cut a small little two foot trench. They addressed it. Then you look up today, it's like halfway down the hill.
The water undermined the road.
It was hollow.
What they needed to, they kept checking it.
Okay, so that's why the thing, okay.
Yeah. After they're done with paving, like I said, tomorrow they hope to finish the pre-level, and then they'll start paving main line of Main Street, and that will take several days. So, again, it's completely weather dependent. The final lift of asphalt today was okay to be paving base lifts, but you can't pave your final lift of asphalt when, like this morning, the ground was wet. You can't do it. It has to be a warm, dry day. So really hoping that we'll get some decent weather later this week and next.
Mr. Mayor, with that whole stretch between that house there and Subway Shop, it's all commercial. I think now, before we put the stripes down, all the final stuff, why don't we take some measurements and consider putting some angle parking there? Because if it's going to be commercial, they're going to need parking. And as we know from what's happened over on Vista, parking is at a premium. So if we want to do something, now's the time to think about doing some angle parking. Quadruple parking.
Figured out the
bike lines.
There's no width. You don't have the width.
So you lose all the federal parking. I don't know. How much federal funding?
Yeah. Well, let's put the bike lanes someplace else.
Where?
Figure it out.
Why don't we have Janice answer the question?
Well, Kirk, we would not have the width there to do the angle parking. There is some parallel parking along the street. We were able to keep some of that. Some of it we're going to lose because of two bus stops we're going in.
I'm talking that street between 4th and 3rd.
Just the one block. Yeah, there would not be enough width to have angle parking on that street for that section.
The width of the road remains pretty much the same as what it was previous to this project.
It's pretty wide. I mean, you go to Fairhaven, you go to Linden, you see how they're doing it. So. I'm trying to think ahead. 10 years. Some parking. Got an issue.
Okay, after paving's done, then Strider's crews will come back through and adjust utilities or raise the iron, however you want to say. So that would include raising water gate valves, manhole rings and covers, and that sort of thing. Once that's done, then you'll see striping happening. Then after that, the landscaper will come in and we'll finish up with the streetlights probably about the same time that they start in on landscaping. So.
Do you have an approximate date for streetlights?
Right now they're scheduled to come in May 1st. I might be able to adjust that forward depending on whether or not the paving activities get done.
I just need to know how big a whip to get out on Steve LeBrant. Get those brackets made, baby.
He's making them right now.
I know he is. But he called me again this morning. How much time do I have?
He's running out of time.
I told him you don't have any time. You got the weekend. Use it.
So does anybody have any questions?
Any questions for Katie before she buttons up? Customer Safaria?
Not a question as much as a comment. I really like the picture. I thought that was a great way to... You're right, telling 1,000 words kind of thing.
Customer Snowpen?
How are we doing on budget? Above, below, right on the nose?
We're within budget. Currently, I'm within budget.
Mm-hmm. Good. Always
that's
good
to
hear.
I'm used to hearing.
Okay, any more questions? Okay, no, that's it. All right.
One more.
Oh, Councilman Smetzler?
Councilman Zimmerman's question, being the new guy on some of these street things, is can you eventually do angle parking as a dump wide enough? You mentioned Fairhaven. That's awfully narrow. Probably not going to meet any codes today. Is that possible in the future?
I do not think we have the width there.
Okay. I don't know.
For angle parking versus parallel parking, it takes some additional
width. What's the width now? What do you need?
For angle parking, what do we need? How much additional width?
Oh, you've got a bike lane there, so you can move the bike lane.
Let's move the bike
lane.
Let's move the bike lane to Alder Street.
Well, yeah, the bike has to get there.
I don't care.
It's one of the points we got.
Councilperson Hanson?
You're dealing with a project that's partially federal funded. I don't think the feds are going to let you put that bike lane over on Alder Street.
Was it a multimodal grant?
We're required to accommodate bicyclists and pedestrians. And that's what we've done on this project, by adding the bike lane and the sidewalks.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll shut that one down.
Okay, next up is the well water supply project bid. No, let's keep rolling.
Keep on rolling.
They can move back into position.
Let me change the chair.
I should go down to Colson on Saturday.
Where was that?
Okay, Council.
Just right. Good evening. Janice Marlega, Public Works Director. Back in July of 2010, Council gave staff approval to proceed with the plans, specifications, and estimate on our well water supply project. This project will convert the city's current surface water treatment plant to a groundwater treatment plant. And there will be improvements at actually three locations, one at the shop well, the Douglas well site, and then at the water treatment plant. So the plan to be converted to treat the groundwater versus the surface water. And in addition, a water main will be installed that connects the two well sites to the water treatment plant. And that portion of the project is being bid separately under Schedule B. The project that we're looking at tonight is Schedule A, the facilities. And the bids were open on Schedule A on April 12th. The low bid was received from RAS Construction, a contractor out of Bellingham. And their bid amount was $2,967,799.42. The engineer's estimate for this project is $3,221,222.87. And the low bid is approximately 80% below the engineer's estimate, which amounts to about $250,000 savings.
20%? Did I hear 80%?
8%. Sorry, what did I say? 18?
You said 80.
Whoops. Hey, I was only... no, I wanted a reasonable bid. Hey, I was just testing if you were listening.
Well,
we're listening. Thank you. Yeah, I wanted a reasonable bid. Not a really low one, a reasonable bid. And that's what we got. Okay, the construction schedule has been structured to have the city on groundwater by December 15th, the end of this year. Our contract with PUD
terminates at the end of this year. And so we're on, as long as the contractor starts work about mid-May, we should be able to meet that date. We have everything lined out in the contract in order to make that happen. Okay, and then as far with the water main Schedule B, that goes, we're going to do a call for bids on April 20th. So then that will follow this. And then I'll turn it over to Mark, and he's going to cover the funding portion.
Let's stop for a second, though. Let's review, because some people are new on the audience and new to council. Let's review how we got to why we're going to well water.
Okay. Yeah, there's probably three issues that's driving this action. And one is the PUD, the rate increases. Over the last couple of years, the city has, we've got double-digit rate increases. And those double-digit rate increases are going to continue out, a number of years. And so the city, so far we've been able to absorb those rate increases, but we're not going to be able to continue doing that without a rate increase to the city of Ferndale customers. So far we've been able to absorb the rate increases, because we knew that like end of this year the plan was to be on that the city would have their own water supply, and then we would just be using the PUD payment in order to cover the loan payments. Questions?
Yes. Where are they going to make up the money, the PUD? I know I suppose it's not our problem. Who cares? But like when we work with the fire people, we have to give them a 5-year notice or something like that. Whenever we break a contract with the fire department,
Our contract then was a year notice. But let's go backwards.
But the PUD, so they can they've got some other stuff, so they know that we're doing stuff.
Let's explain that. Is we are the only process water account the PUD has. So the PUD really is not feeling bad about losing us as a customer. They really didn't want us as a customer, because to use us, they had to have another settling pond. And so Janice is correct, but their projection was they gave us the rate increases. We had 25%, 25, 25, 25. So 100% increase within a 4-year period with no indication after that. And it was pretty obvious. It's like, well, we'd like to consider our well supply. Yeah, that'd be a good idea. You guys should do that. Their main customer is refineries that just take raw water. So if they can take water out of the Nooksack with minimal filtration and ship it north and, frankly, charge more than they were charging us, good deal for them. It just really wasn't a customer they're scheduled to handle. So, Councilperson Mutchler?
How long have you been obtaining our water through the PUD? Let's go back a long time?
I think in the late 70s. But that's my understanding.
Well, associations.
Yeah, the city was on well water.
My question is probably will end up going into Mark's part, but I was in a way surprised to read in the Herald when they said the whole project was going to be $5 million, three now and another two later, when only $3 million came to committee. And I'm wondering why we're not looking at the whole package of everything to get from A to B and the water and everything. I know we're going to have two different companies do it, but why weren't this all brought together as a package, or the funding all brought together in a package and say this is how we're going to pay for it, or if we got to go out for bond or something, why aren't we looking at the whole dollar amount, only a part of it? I'm afraid that we're going to get into one of those situations where we approve part of it tonight, and then we're forced to approve something later on because it's kind of like, well, you started the project, now you got to do it, like we did with the pond.
So that's part of Mark's presentation. Any more? But before we go to Mark, any questions for Janice? No, seeing none. Okay. Our treasurer, Mr. Peterson.
Council, we've been seeking long-term financing for $5 million for both parts of this. This is for the two buildings for the wellheads and changes to our water treatment plant. Like the public works director said, in May the intent would be to go out to laying the pipe for the rest. Total is about $5 million. Although this is very favorable, this bid, by the way, 8% below engineering estimate. So it could be we'd be a little bit under $5 million. But we've applied to the USDA for a little under $5 million loan, a combination loan, and a very small chance of any grants. But we've been doing dual path. We're also going with our plan for going out to for 20-year bonds through our bond broker, Mr. David Tregerser, whom you've met, who handled our bond issue last year, our general obligation bonds last year for various city facilities. So that's the plan, $5 million. The two are very close together in terms of bid award. And
I just add that as far as the financing goes, we have been talking about the entire switching over. You can't switch partially over to Wells and partially with PUD. You have to do one or the other. And obviously we want to go the well water route for some of the reasons that our public works director talked about, as well as we even did a taste test. And we found out that the filtration method we're going to be using for our water makes the Ferndale water taste excellent. It tastes a lot better. I never really thought there was much difference between water, but they actually do a little taste test for us. Anyway, but the point I wanted to make was the $5 million, the debt service on that $5 million amortized over 20 or more years, the debt service will equal what we're currently paying the PUD. So this switchover to the well system should be rate neutral. As far as we can tell, we won't need to raise our water rates to pay this debt. We're virtually going to be taking what we would have been paying the PUD, and we'll simply make the debt service payments on these, either the USDA bonds or some other bank financing. So from a financing standpoint, it's pretty much a push when it comes to one capital cost versus the other capital cost. The real thing that makes this project attractive, and we've gone through this over the last few months, is the pressure that we're starting to see and we expect to increase on extractions of water out of the Nooksack. The tribes are making more headway into the idea of claiming more of this water. It'll only be a bigger issue as time goes on, as we need more water, and getting it out of a well system kind of puts our future in our own hands. So we should end up with a better tasting product, but more importantly, a product that we could then have a little more control over, and we're not subject to the jurisdiction of the tribes or the courts coming in and what they call adjudicating the watershed, where you start taking the water in the river and allocating it to different users. We should not be in that discussion, which I think is going to put the city in a very good position in the future.
Treasurer, have you finished with your presentation?
I am, unless there's questions.
Okay, questions for the Treasurer. Councilperson Mutchler was first, and Zimmerman.
So what we're trying to do is, of course, have a clean and reliable source of water, but also save our customers. So can I give a hypothetical, let's say my two-month water bill, this my water bill is $100. 10 years from now, had we not switched to the wells, we would be increasing it 20-25% a year, blah, 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 blah.
200.
Well, water is one component of our cost structure.
But I'm just saying, I'm just isolating that part because I realize it's just one part of it.
It'd be a significant increase over
and
several years. It's not.
And then going with the wells, that $100 should be $100 next year and the year after with some cost of living kind of stuff in there. I want to know in 10 years, are we going to see a difference if we could get a time machine?
It certainly adds to rate stability. I don't know about the maintenance factor on our proposed well water system versus the maintenance factor, from the PUD. My impression is that the maintenance cost from PUD is much higher than our well water system maintenance will be. In addition, I believe our well water system will take fewer or less costly quantity of chemicals than we pay PUD monthly now for chemicals. So The wholesale water purchase cost is close to $250,000 a year, water and chemicals. So looking at those double-digit and severe rate increase projections from the PUD, we'd have to do significant rate increases.
So when I get hammered with
another $5 million that were encumbered to the city, I want to be able to say to my neighbor, but your water bill over time will be less. Can we say that?
I'm going to say rate stability. Over the alternative of continuing to purchase water will
as
be less. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Now, we know with reasonable certainty that the PUD is going to be raising rates 25% for probably the next 4 years. So reasonably, our rates, if we do nothing, would double in 4 years. And I think it is absolutely, without doubt, cheaper for us to go to our well system, certainly over that four-year, fairly certain period.
Okay, Councilor Zimmerman Hansen, and then back to Goodrich.
Mark, what was the upfront finder's fee cost commission to the bonds people on a project? What percentage?
I'm trying to remember. We did the bonds last year. I'd have to get back. It's probably less than 1%. It's typical bond broker gets a cut. We have to pay for our bond rating. We paid Moody's rating service.
And we already have that since from a year ago, right?
No. You need to go back every year, take a fresh look, and then the legal costs of bond counsel. So I'll get back with you, though, on the percentage.
Around less than 1%?
I've got that data back
somewhere
at the office.
Between 1% and 2%.
That's what I'm thinking. But I'll email everybody with that answer.
And also, while we have in Public Works Committee, we kind of move this ahead for discussion. And, we have some concerns as far as what are our rates out there right now. We don't know. And what is the USDA versus, the private market?
Sure. In committee, that issue was raised, as well as some members were uncomfortable with approving a bid, which we have to then proceed and get busy and start doing this thing, without having money in hand. I did email our bond broker because I think that's the more likely way we're going to finance this. The USDA is with the federal budget issues lately, they're just kind of treading water. They did come into the office. They didn't have to furlough. But that's all. I'm betting we'll go with the 20-year long-term financing with the bond market. But I did email our bond broker, posed him that question that some council members would be uncomfortable awarding this bid now, even though we don't have the money. The answer came back, and I've got a copy if you'd like to see it.
Pass it out.
Sure.
Listen, you already did.
I'm sorry?
Didn't we already get it?
No, I just gave one out. So.
Oh, okay. One time.
Now we have this fellow.
Here, one council member grabbed me before we started this evening.
Now we know. Insider.
barring a big disruption to the financial markets, our schedule is we'll get our money July 29th. We'll get our money July 29th. Whatever the council approves to go out with, not only approximately $5 million for the well water project, but if the council was to approve some sewer bonds and some more general obligation bonds to finish the police station and any other city capital facilities. So barring that, we should stay on schedule. We did this whole thing last year with the general obligation bonds. We're going to be working very hard to get that preliminary operating statement available for investors, go through that whole thing with Moody's, including telephone calls versus traveling to San Francisco. We're into saving money, so we do that on the telephone with Moody's. But barring that, there's short-term financing available. I've got letters from two different banks that will do construction financing with us, Peoples and Banner. Banner's our main bank of the city. And even Tregesser from D.A. Davidson said that they could arrange short-term financing if we need to delay a few months if something weird happened to the bond financial market. So I feel very confident. I don't see any reason to not award the bid tonight.
Councilperson Hansen is next.
Well, I was going to respond a little bit to John's question regarding rates and what would happen. Not all of the money that we pay PUD. That's not all of our rate income. I'm just going to use some wrong figures.
Right,
we take a million bucks from our water customers. We could spend $250,000 of that on raw water.
Yeah.
The other $750,000 is on maintenance of the system and our operators and all of that kind of stuff.
Right.
The true answer to the question, in 4 years, when it's $500,000 of PUD, that $250,000 extra would have to be a direct pass-through to the rate customer, because there's nowhere else to get it.
Yeah, that's so, even in our financial policies on utilities. It actually says that.
In regards to this project, I've taken a look at and talked a little bit with Janice about this. We have a time frame. That 15th of December is the key date. If we're not switched over, then we are going to essentially take whatever hit that PUD wants to give us in order to extend, even if it's for a month or two. And my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, PUD is at the maximum on settling ponds and would force us then to also build a settling pond.
That's correct. That's the direction that they're headed. So doing nothing is not really an option.
It's really important for us to follow the timeline that's been set up.
I guess I should answer. I don't have a quote on rates. I know that was the question. Last year, our general obligation bonds, our 20-year bonds, because we had a five-year Vactor truck, I believe it came in at 3.74% weighted average for 20 years. And probably the USDA would probably get a distinct advantage, maybe up to one percentage point if we got a USDA loan. They're typically sub-market rates. We would most likely use that, but it doesn't look like timing-wise. We're still working with them, but it doesn't look like timing-wise that the USDA is going to be the answer.
The federal government's dealing with other things other than our loan. Councilperson Goodrich?
First off, I want to say that I'm not opposed to this project, so don't take what I'm saying as I'm opposed to it. I think it's the way that we're going to have to go for the city. What I have a question to Mark is, you talked about our rating of the city. I'm just quickly here came up with this year $10 million in debt that we're talking about adding to the city, $2 million for the pond, $5 million on the water issue, another $3 million for the police station on top of the things that we did last year. How does that affect our rating? And, by taking on all this additional debt, we show ways to pay for it, but yet, it's like going out and getting another credit card.
I think the revenue debt is separate from the general obligation debt. Revenue debt, if you show our spreadsheets, show our logical story to convince Moody's or whoever we use, probably Moody's, for a good bond rating, we're looking for an A2 or better. We got A2 last year on our general obligation bonds. With the strength of the number of customers for water sewer, and we intend, if you approve, we intend to add storm utility to the water sewer this year, even though we're not going for storm bonds until 2012. It adds rate stability with more customers and more revenue base. So that we tell the story. It's a good story. The debt service paid for by not having to pay and buy wholesale water from PUD. That should sing really well. General obligation, again, we have a debt ceiling. It's a calculation. We have ability to pay, which is probably more important to convince Moody's and others, investors, that it's a good, secure investment. I'm confident we'll get and our bond broker thinks also we will get a good bond rating.
Councilperson Ferrio?
I'd like to make a motion to award the bid for the well water supply project Schedule A facilities in the amount of $2,967,799.42. With a contingency allowance of $300,000 for a total amount of $3,267,800 to RAS Construction.
Second.
Okay, further discussion. Next one up, Councilman Ingram. Or
no? I was going to make the motion.
Okay, so I think, Lloyd, you raised your hand before. So I'll go Councilperson Zimmerman and then Kimmel Thousand.
1%, that's a big chunk over 20 years. What's that cost over 20 years?
It's all paid up front. That's any consolation. I don't have that data with me tonight. to say it again, I don't have that data with me tonight, the cost of issuance. I believe it's a reasonable.
Interest savings of the USDA versus the.
We still have to pay the lawyer for a USDA loan. It's a general obligation. Either revenue or general obligation. We have to pay the lawyer, the attorney for all that. You're right. There's no fees for the USDA versus going to the 20-year bond market.
I mean, the interest rate, 1% over 20 years, I mean, that's.
No, we would jump on it if we got it from the USDA, no doubt. It's sub-market rates and lower fees.
Still could happen, but
yeah, that's why we've been.
Congressman Larson just says, Gary, it's in the queue. We just have other things before us right now.
Well, and also, don't we have some money in there right now that we haven't spent?
What does that mean? I'm sorry. What?
When we borrowed, you know, some money, you know, last year, and we haven't spent it yet. So if you saw a bridge loan of from ourselves to ourselves until we can get a favorable thing from the USDA.
Certainly, we would bring to council a short-term minute fund loan
right. If
we needed to. If you award this tonight and approve it, we'll probably make the first payment to them in June, I'm guessing. We could probably stretch it till the first payment in June. If we get our bond money on July 29th, perhaps an unfund loan from general fund if need be. There is working capital in the water fund that may very well take care of this. Probably wouldn't want to touch the general obligation bond money we got last year for those dedicated projects. Probably wouldn't want to do unfund loans on those proceeds. Although you're right, there's $3.2 million sitting there for the police station.
We're sitting there.
Gathering a very small amount of interest, admittedly.
Councilor Smith-Pezzi?
I'm going to reluctantly support this, but I'm really getting tired of being, you know, put in between a rock and a hard place on all these decisions. They got to happen tonight. Our timeline, you know, is so tight. If that's the case, I think we need to start looking at expanding the timeline or doing a better job tracking the timeline. We don't even have final numbers again on a project. Going forward, we're being asked without final numbers, estimates on what the cost is going to be. I, for one, would have liked to have seen a lot more information, not being handed stuff right at the last minute. You know, that's potentially going to change our mind on how we're going to vote. So that's pretty much where I'm at.
Councilperson Hansen?
I'm going to make a couple of comments. Number one, I tend to follow the interest rates of muni bonds just for my own curiosity and a very small investment in them. Muni bond interest rates probably has gone up a bit, but these people don't deal in tenths of a percent. They deal in hundredths of a percent. We're talking maybe 18 to 20 hundredths of a percent that they've gone up in the last year. And it all has to do with the economy and the amount of money that's been borrowed and all this kind of stuff. We're still looking easily at under 5%. And the likelihood of something happening, you know, one of the things that could happen is the failure to raise the debt ceiling. And if that happens, hang on to your shorts because everything's going to be in the tank. But I think we can confidently go ahead and say that muni bonds are going to be available to us at 5% or under. The second thing is, I want to remind everyone that this is not the first time we've heard this. We've had two resolutions that were passed by this council. I believe it's two resolutions. One was to go ahead with the well water project, and it directed Public Works to do the feasibility study. RH2 was hired. This feasibility study, there was a resolution by this council to go forward with this. The second resolution was to have Mark seek funding. We've already done that. And that had to do with the USDA resolution, the USDA and other funding sources. That was the resolution. And we passed it. So this is not shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. This is just a continuing of the progress of the project.
Councilperson Goodrich?
I just wanted to say that I will be supporting this, but my concern is the piecemeal aspect of it. I would have liked and seen the whole project brought before council, all phases of it. I don't like this, the piecemeal aspect of, you know, we'll get part of it tonight and then part of it some other time and type of thing. And I just wish that on our projects we would just get everything up front, and it would, to me, make things a lot easier and a lot clearer than to say, well, we're hoping to get this and we'll get to you back and, you know, type of a thing. So that's my comment on this. I just wish we had both pieces together tonight so we can just consider the whole project and not have to revisit it again.
Councilperson Zimmerman?
Janet, this comes, question is kind of concern is to you. Liquidated damages. Have what part of the contracts have you improved upon since the one that we give for the street project as far as time over, you know, the overruns of what they're going to do? Is that something that you've worked into it or honed that? I mean, we didn't see the contracts. I've kind of asked about them before.
Well, the contract's about this thick. Mm-hmm. But we have included liquidated damages and actually at a couple different, like, milestones. Because the intent here was to have the city, the most cost-effective approach was to have the city on well water by the end of the year.
Or
then that would save the city the additional payments to PUD. So that's, I've been moving forward with that. And so on here, there's different, in the way the contract's set up, is there's just different, kind of different, let's say, milestones, where if the contractor doesn't meet the schedule at a certain milestone, then there'll be liquidated damages imposed. So there's pretty, it's a pretty aggressive and pretty strict schedule on the facilities. Now, we ended up splitting the facilities from the water main because it's different work. There's different requirements. The work can progress at a different rate, different permitting. On the facilities, there's equipment that they need to get in there in order ASAP, whereas we had a little more time to get the additional permits for the water main. And so that's why we ended up splitting it up into two schedules. So it was more from a project management standpoint.
So this is the $3 million of the whole mm-hmm. $5 million. So we're going out to bond for $5 million.
To cover both phases, because the other one's going to follow.
Okay.
It's not, you know, it's just a little bit behind the facilities because we really needed to move forward on the facilities because of the turnaround,
so,
the ordering on the equipment.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, Janice, getting back to the hammer of the wording of the contract, who wrote this contract? Was it you? Was it Greg? Who's in charge of putting that final?
Well, we hired RH2 to prepare the plan, specifications, and the estimate.
Okay.
And so that's what makes up the bulk of your contract.
Okay.
Then the city just has a standard contract form
that
incorporates all that information.
So what are the penalties on the RAS company if we have to RAS them?
Okay, if they we're using the standard DOT liquidated damage contract that we typically use. And then in addition to that, this we've added is that the contractor will have to pay the PUD, our PUD cost, if we're not online by December 15th. Mm-hmm. If we'll still have those two more weeks, and we're using that time period then to kind of test the filter and do some adjustments. But then at first of the year, if the contractor doesn't have us online, then per our contract, they would have to cover that cost.
So it's safe to say the council person can make an appointment and you can sit and go through the contract page by page if you'd like to?
Yeah, it's pretty thick.
And so was that, you say the standard DOT, was that standard DOT clause put in this road project?
It's the same clause, but on this one here, we use that one and the PUD requirement. Right. Mm-hmm.
Councilperson Ingram, then Goodrich.
Just a really quick comment, Janice. When it comes to the mains, you talk about a time-sensitive project. That's probably the biggest one we've had around because that's going right straight through all the wetland. So we can't mess around with that one. We got to get going on.
Are you talking about the water main?
Yeah.
But yeah, the water main, because that's why there's additional permitting required to do that. But yet we needed to get the buildings underway.
I just wanted to bring that up, because the fact that we've got to get across there before then, that absolutely has to be done completely backfilled before the next rainy season hits.
Yeah, so we have a strict schedule for the water main, too. That work has to be completed by November 1st. So we've kind of pieced everything together to meet that. What's that?
Let's go for October 1st.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's why we put the contract together.
Well, quickly, because the Imhoff closure is scheduled for...
Well, we just gave the contractor the option. They can close it for just a consecutive, I think, 3 to 4 weeks.
It's scheduled for August, wasn't it?
Well, there's certain work that they cannot begin until August. So we can to minimize, dewatering cost.
Yeah, if he's intelligent, he'll go across Imhoff in August.
Doesn't part of the water main go through county?
Yes, and we had to get a county permit.
We got all the permits and everything?
Yep. All permits, except we still have one more on the water main, but we're getting close to that. But as far as we have all of our DOH, Department of Health approvals, so I mean that there took, a good year or so just to obtain those.
So in theory, the permits shouldn't be an issue to hold up the project?
No.
Councilperson Zimmerman.
Jas, did I hear you say that they would close Imhoff for 4 weeks, or do they have a 4 week window in which to work on that?
No,
how long would Imhoff Road be shut down?
I'm pretty sure it was four weeks,
a month.
Not a 3 week. So I can't remember when I brought that forward to council to approve, or just the committee.
It was reported that by the Herald, I believe, on the blog anyway. I don't know that anyone in the district covered it, but. Snag that out of our packet.
But it came to council, and council approved it.
Yes.
Yeah, for a four-week closure during the construction. And that there would be, you don't have the set time frame of that. It just has to be a consecutive four-week period. So that they will not, finish all the work during that time. But that will provide them with an opportunity where they can, they're not going to have to deal with as much traffic. They'll be able to get in there and get the work done quicker.
Just that section.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still just blown away that they would shut down a major road, for a month.
Well, there's pretty reasonable there's a pretty reasonable detour too around that. So traffic volume is fairly low. There's a reasonable detour.
Okay, council. Seeing no further questions, the motion is before the floor and second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Okay, motion carries 7-0. I'm going to take a 5-minute break so we can get the students out of here so they can go home and do their homework. Students, you can line up here and we'll try to sign, and some of the council will go over there.
Is this the sheet you want to do?
No, that is a pretty good sheet.
But it doesn't have Ferguson.
No, I've got a notes back that does not only these two.
I didn't want to bring out this. The best answer is.
Yeah.
I was
fine. See, those are really kind of low and reasonable. Vegas has got a bigger chunk. But exactly.
Committee packet. Good. That may not be at the actual committee meeting.
He said I may not. But,
The ordinance is passed.
Hopefully it won't go anywhere.
Yeah.
It was 4-2, as I recall. 4-2.
Good PowerPoint, half as long. It would have been great.
So what position?
It was dark and we were sleeping.
3:30 in the morning.
We'd actually.
You could have called and I said, just drive another 15 miles to find Healdsburg because there is a cool town to stay.
I bet Janice knows, the public works director.
There's ground elevation. There's probably not much different than my house. And I'm 28 feet above sea level.
I think everything's working.
You run by and you recognize the people. It's just good energy. It was hard.
I thought about that one time.
Pick up
training,
picture of the
then
paper.
Then I twisted my ankle
taking
playing
a picture
basketball.
Of the oh, below
and
you.
That kind
of
I'm sure you've never heard anything about. We'll go to Yori, and then we'll move from there.
All right. And I think that what we really do want to have is a discussion, because what we have heard from council is this is a big decision that council has in front of them, and it's a decision that maybe should have been made almost 15 years ago, and then again probably closer to 8 years ago. Maybe it should have been made 40 years ago when people started talking about a second option for an east-west connection in Ferndale. But it wasn't, and as I mentioned to one council member earlier today, there's been a lot of kicking the can down the road over the last 40 years, and there hasn't quite been a decision that would pay in a responsible manner for the costs of transportation, and those costs have not gone down. They've basically gone up. At the same time, since our impact fees are based on the impact of growth, folks in the audience and from the development community have said by increasing fees, and not only impact fees, but all of our fees over time, at some point there is a tipping point where it becomes cost prohibitive to develop in Ferndale. And since we are not the only game in town, there could be other jurisdictions that would just as soon have their business. So where is that tipping point where clearly we have shown you, council, the mathematical equations that shows here are the projects that have been identified, and really there are two main projects. There's Thornton and Main. Here are the costs, and thus here are the impact fees. And I think the council generally has said, yes, that makes sense. The same as council has said, yes, that makes sense for sewer and water, park, our other fees. So what's the aggregate of what makes sense for development, and especially it was raised Ferndale Station? At what point does it become so expensive that a development won't come? So the mayor and I had the opportunity to speak with a developer who has not developed in Ferndale before, but has developed in a lot of other places and specialized in commercial projects. And I don't know if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, and the gentleman, he purchased the old Pioneer Plaza site. Developers developed around the state, very good reputation. And first, it's a difficult decision, and your council is struggling with that. What he wanted to say is, you kind of need to decide, because you've opened up the door, and so you've scared investors knowing where are you going to go, what are you going to do. We really haven't done a price. And he basically has some investors that want to know pretty soon, hopefully by mid-May, of what direction we're going. He says, where you go up, down, whatever, I just need a decision, because I'm planning things for the future that takes quite a while. And this is a big part of it. Terms of square footage. He was the first one that you saw my email this weekend was, and John hit right on. He goes, I don't really care what your traffic is, whatever it is. I build on the fact of what is the total impact per square footage. And that's probably the way a homeowner does too, is what's my total price? I know my total price. I know traffic, sewer, water, everything. What is my total price? He's the first one that did it to square footage, usable square footage. It was very interesting. I just asked, because Yuri's there, and I go, what's the ceiling that no national retailer ever even talks to us? And he goes, well, I can tell you right now, $5 a square foot of usable space, no one will ever talk to you. You'll stop growth, no one will ever come to Ferndale.
Of your lot, not your buildings, your lot.
Yeah. Lot or building?
Lot. Usable space
usable,
on your lot.
Usable square footage of your lot.
Parking, everything. Correct. Okay, big difference.
So then we asked, I go, well, what's the low point? He goes, I can't give you that answer. So then, he left, and I called him. I said, well, do you have any, I don't want to just take your opinion. He goes, well, sure. I'll give you the phone number of a banker I know, and I'll give you a phone number of another banker. And I called a couple other developers, and they kind of changed my way of thinking of going, yeah, you want to look at the total, and I know Mr. Breathwaite has said that too. It's not just traffic; it's the combination of all your fees that is affecting my cost of the product I have to put out. And so, we're doing a component of traffic, and we have to work through that.
But the end result is the total of what it's going to take. You know, do you make yourself not affordable? The one banker was very interested. he goes, I can tell you that if you're below this figure, I'm not so sure you can ever do any traffic improvements. And it was $2. He said, if you're under $2, total impact, he says, I don't believe that you can ever improve your traffic. And he was a former council member from Sammamish. He goes, you know, obviously Sammamish, different situation, but I can tell you there he was on the city council 12 years in Sammamish. He goes, go below two, you might be in trouble. You just don't have money to fix anything. So it's like, all right.
So if we are we being told now that rather than base our traffic communication fees, vehicle trips per day, we need to start looking square footage?
No, that's what he was saying. He said, when you're asking me a question of where we wanted to know, where are we and where can we go before we chase away
development.
You're still going to have to come up with a traffic number.
With our proposed traffic impact fee, which is $2,604 per trip, if you've got 220,000 square foot of usable space, it's $2,064,000. And that pencils out to $70-some-odd a square foot.
No, I don't think that formula works itself out.
So, where are we going here?
Well,
because you're turning this upside down now, basically, and saying, a total of $5 per square foot of all the fees stops everything dead. Well, you can't get anywhere close to $2,000 per vehicle trip with that kind of a statement. You can't get anywhere close.
We have done comparison of Ferndale Station. Ferndale Station came in relatively recently, as you all know, and it had been brought up at a previous council meeting. So if you calculate what Ferndale Station actually paid, all their impact fees, storm fees, water connection, sewer connection, we went through all the permits. They paid 77 cents per square foot.
That why Main Street's backed up?
I'm sorry?
That why Main Street's backed up way below $2 historically?
77 cents?
77 cents.
It would make sense.
It would be what they paid. With the traffic impact fee increased to $2,604, they would pay $1.46 per square foot. They would pay $1.46 a square foot with the proposed traffic impact fees. Now, this is for commercial.
So we should really be at like $3,300, you're saying we're shooting too low?
Yeah, no, I think the point I think that's really being made here rather clearly is that given our proposed traffic impact fees combined with our other impact fees, we are certainly in the ballpark for any sophisticated developer come into town and see Ferndale as an attractive place to do business.
And we have room to readdress maybe some of those other fees and make them.
And now there's another sheet that's going around that Yuri's put together that compares us. Now that you've had this global comparison to developments, now this is a more localized comparison between Bellingham, Ferndale, and Linden, which will show that our proposed impact fees, as proposed, will put us less than Bellingham and less than Linden.
Right now, Linden has slightly higher fees than Bellingham. They're both within 0.1% of one another, which is remarkable, knowing just how close those two jurisdictions are.
If you look at the orange.
If you look at the orange down below. This is for an average single-family house. It's very difficult, if not impossible, to project out all these different types of development. So we found the most common apple, if you will, to compare. Ferndale is right now at 86% of Linden/Bellingham for our fees. We're higher in some, we're lower in others. Mm-hmm. With the proposed increase, we go up to 89% of those two other jurisdictions. So we would still be beneath them overall in impact fees. And now this doesn't consider that. We have a sewer and water connection fee incentive scale that could reduce it. It doesn't take into account that we don't include Linden's stormwater fee, which varies by project. And each city does have different incentives, different increases depending on what, on where you go. But on average, the city of Ferndale is less than both the city of Linden and the city of Bellingham.
Also, I wanted to just mention, too, that earlier tonight we were talking about the residential heights. Councilmember Faria said something that actually I wrote down because it, I thought it was extremely appropriate. She noted that we have a responsibility to our existing citizens of Ferndale. And this has to do not only with residential heights, people who live here now versus people who are going to be building homes in the future, but I think it more importantly also has to do with the kind of town we want to have. This has to do with level of service. This has to do with impact fees. As the mayor said, we don't want to be giving away the farm. We don't want to be charging so little that when we have these impacts, we can't do anything about it. And as we've heard from these developers, you don't want to be charging so much that you simply don't get development. So you need to find that that relatively large, but that sweet spot between those two, with the idea that we do have a responsibility to the people that already live here, that have invested themselves in the community, who love their views, who love, you know, the schools. And I think overall the point that I want to make is that these fees are more, and more is not good if you're paying those fees. But more is a relatively, you know, it is a relative term. And I'm hopeful that you'll be able to kind of get some global context here when it comes to not only how our fees compare to the rest of the county, but how our fees compare to those developers that will be coming here and paying those fees.
Now, before we go to, because Brett, 100%, but I want to clarify something that the banker ex-councilperson said. So Gary, you know, and he thought about it, and then he called me back. And I really appreciate we had a long conversation. He goes, "Man, Gary, your council has a tough situation in the fact that a national or large-scale retailer plays a completely different game than the little guy doing a music store who's his lifelong dream to be a business." And he says that figure of $2 a problem, but he's looking for zero, you know, because his marketing's set up. And he says, and that's that tough situation of a council trying to make a fee that's okay for the guy starting out his dream on a shoestring and a national retailer. Says, those are completely different things. And he says, tell your council from me, tough decisions. Tough decisions. So, Councilperson Goodrich.
What direction are you looking at from council tonight?
None. This is really just informational. We wanted to give you this information to digest in anticipation of us bringing it back to you. As a longer term, too, if you do like the idea of the $2 to $5 range, that can be something that can be integrated at your direction into a wider policy. But that's an overall umbrella. This is just informational discussion.
All right. Are you going to come back to committees then next with the final vote? Okay.
We will.
We'd love to have some more discussion. We've got some time, and I mean, because like John, I really appreciate what John told me over the week ago. Gary, this is a big decision, and like the banker ex-councilor do, that's a big decision you're doing. Councilperson Faria.
I was just going to say quickly that I really appreciate this colorful, easy-to-read chart of information, because I don't think that it's something that we have looked at, and that's the overall idea of the fees. And it's interesting to see where the other jurisdictions are higher, because it's very obvious looking, you know, where they swing in some areas to make their fees higher. So even if the one that we're talking about right now, we might feel like we're quite a bit higher. Overall, not so bad. And again, going back to, like Greg has pointed out, what I said earlier, it's looking at the citizens that are here now and making sure that we can do right by them. And, I don't want to give away the farm and have something big come here just so we can mess everything else up, just so we can get the big guy.
Councilperson Ingram, Mutzler, and then Zimmerman.
Looking at the long chart, most of the mom and pop stuff that, to use that phrase, is going to come to Ferndale, is probably going to come into downtown.
Strip mall. Oh, downtown.
Okay. Well, you know, the general Hagen's to Bob Bell's, okay, for the sake of an expanded downtown. And I notice here that we provided credits for existing water and sewer connections
for Ferndale Station that had already been paid for by grants and Ms. Jeans. So if a mom-and-pop store came into, say, the Liederbach building and said, I want to put a building in here, they're going to pay substantially reduced, maybe not anything, because that building's already been connected and been paid for in the past. Am I kind of going the right way with that?
Yeah, there's no new water sewer.
Because
didn't we do something similar to that with Ace Hardware on their traffic mitigation? It used to be a pharmacy.
Yeah.
Many trips a day. Now it's going to be a hardware store and maybe a few less trips a day. And
you pay the delta.
I think it's also good, important to point out, too, that while the idea of a mom-and-pa operation is kind of the American dream in a lot of ways, if you want to open up a nail studio, you can do that at Ferndale Station, and someone has.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to do a development if your desire is to do nails. So the opportunity exists, hopefully, for fairly sophisticated developers to put together projects that would have components that the less sophisticated, starting out mom-pa could actually...
Just pays their lease payment.
Exactly. So hopefully both people can have their dreams come true.
Before we go to council. Yeah, I think going on top of that, we talked a lot about how things used to be, and gosh, it was only a few short years ago where you'd be able to not pay impact fees or not have to worry about stormwater, what stormwater, so on and so forth. And unfortunately, you do see the mom-and-pas who don't anticipate that, who have either done their business up to now and happened to get into business before all of these state regulations that have brought us all so we're within 5% of one another, the jurisdictions. Unfortunately, in many ways, the days of people being able to erect buildings for their own local business is gone. And that's unfortunately a very sad truth. Gone, or it's going to be more expensive, and
or it's going to be in home business,
or doing a home business, and that's the direction that things look like they're going. And every day we look at ways of how do we reduce the costs, and gosh, we don't win many of those arguments. Where there's a new fee, you know, the PUD does this, or the fire district does this, and costs of doing business are increasing, and the city's passing it on.
If you remember, too, they were actually talking about exempting home occupations from the traffic impact fees as well.
Okay, I'm going to go Mutchler, Zimmerman, Malpezzi, and then we'll open up maybe go audience for comments. So, Councilman Mutchler?
I agree. This total number is so helpful. $22,000 for a house in Ferndale. I know what I paid for my first home in total, for my second home in total, but not sure I became a council member and dug out receipts that I have any idea what park fees were. Secondly, does commercial not pay school and park impact fees? Because that's not listed on the Pioneer Station example, Ferndale Station example.
Correct.
Correct. And then finally, I feel like staff has done its homework. I would love to have seen this item somehow apples to apples if this was done as a Bellingham or a Linden or a Burlington development. I know that's getting more difficult. So that this $1.46, what is that number somewhere else? This is an easy one, I know that. But is there a way we could somehow figure this out, an apples to apples in the various communities?
I don't think so. Honestly, I don't think that we could get you that information.
Councilor Zimmerman,
the Ferndale going down here. You got a total in the orange column of 21,106. Then down below you have the proposed traffic mitigation of 2,000. Is that I don't get it. I mean, if you add that up, that does not come to 21,710.
No, because we.
If you look at transportation impact fees, you got it at 2,000.
Okay, so it's a net increase of 604.
$600. Okay, thank you.
This information is great. Looking at it a little close, I'm not wild that we're. We're above Linden in almost everything, except for the school impact fee. And we're above Bellingham in most everything, except for the park impact fee is the big one that they're bigger. You know, they're a little higher on the sewer end, but we're higher than Bellingham in a lot of the categories. So I appreciate this, but I'm not getting too much of a fuzzy feeling about that we need to be hiking our rates up a lot higher. And then this one is great, but, you know, we're bottom line, we're looking at doubling the cost from when they did do it to when they do it now, almost double. And that's not a good feeling either. So I look forward to the discussion going on.
Certainly, I think this is kind of what some of you were asking for.
Yeah.
Is kind of get some
clarity.
I'm enjoying the conversation.
I'm quite amazed, given your email over the weekend about the fact that if it's under $2, you're going to have a lot of really upset citizens sitting in gridlock to find out that...
One banker's opinion,
but given. But to look at this and say, that's $1.46 even with the proposed increase? Kind of a shock.
Well, you know, I mean, okay, let's talk about that for a second. If you went to that, I mean, what it relates to is the lower you go for that fee, the more we'll have to look at the project list and take projects off. You know, we talked about that where we took a major project. So that's the next step. I mean, it isn't, you know, we just can't magically do this. I mean, if you lower that impact fee, then we're going to have to take projects off. It's as simple as that. So.
Could we not look at the possibility, this may be kind of left field, but John mentioned it, I knew the answer as soon as he said it. Commercial developments don't pay park impact fees, and yet it's not, in my mind, unreasonable to think of Susie Homemaker, coming with her four kids from Bellingham to the big box store in Ferndale and then running over to Pioneer Park.
Charge admission to our council meetings.
Because we do that. I mean, when Barb and I travel, we'll go into a town and we'll drive in and we'll park the bike and get off and have an ice cream cone and walk over to the park. This is not. So I don't know that. Commercials, enterprises don't necessarily have an impact on parks. Just something to think
yeah,
about.
Related to that is you know, the issue of sales tax. Naturally, retail development generates sales tax. And one of the things important to remember is that when we set our impact fees, you know, we have this list of all of our traffic projects. Not all of them qualify for impact fees because only the ones that expand capacity qualify. So we've got a bunch of projects that just kind of get swept off the list. Then, if you remember, we're not charging the new development 100% of that future cost. We're charging 20, 30, in some places 15% of that cost. So the issue becomes, how are we going to pay for the transportation projects that are not growth-related that we need to do anyway? And how we come up with the difference between what we're going to be charging the developers and what the cost of the projects are. The days of Janice Gill going out there and getting the kind of grants she's been able to get are coming to an end because just the way the economy of the U.S. is going. So more and more and more we're going to be faced with perhaps the unlikely but the distasteful idea of using our sales tax in ways that perhaps if you had your druthers, you wouldn't. You probably, if we had $1 million in sales tax, I'm sure all of you could come up with a list of things you'd love the city to do, and improving streets would be on the list, but it probably might not even be near the top of the list. There's a parks department. There's a lot of the other things that we talked about doing. So there is a risk of setting the fees too low because the needs aren't going to go away. But what that does is an artificially low fee forces this council and future councils to use more of that discretionary sales tax revenue that we hope to get in ways that, again, if you had your druthers, you might not have as your first-tier need. So there's always this, and it's that balance. You know, we can't charge development all the costs because we've got that $5 lid that no one's going to come. So we realize that there's going to be a need for us to take sales tax and probably hire more cops, pay for our fire department and the mutual aid, and then parks department and wherever else we could think of. But a good percentage of it is going to go towards these transportation projects because either they don't don't comply with the impact fees, or we don't get grants from other sources. So, again, realize that this is a tough decision, but any way we go, there's going to be ramifications of this council and future councils.
I'll go to Yori. I'm going to hold on Councilor Stance, and then I'll go to the audience.
In talking to Bellingham about their fees, we asked them, what's your recovery on impact fees, where we are proposing with 2604 recovering between 28% and 40%, so figure around 35% or so. That's with fees and development contributions. They recover about 16% of theirs, and the way that they make up the difference is through using sales tax. So if they were to recover 32%, just as we do, doubling theirs, their transportation impact fee, the actual impact fee, would be closer to $3,800, about $4,000. So they have the big boxes right now. They have the sales tax where they can use that to cover a significant portion of their impact fees. The other thing I wanted to address is it's come up quite frequently, level of service. Okay, you know, maybe we go down to a D from a C. What does that do? In our city, about 70% of the project costs are Thornton and Main. So when those two start to break, they break pretty big. If we were a city that had projects where you had a roundabout here, a roundabout there, an intersection over there, you could reduce level of service and actually see a change in your impact fees. But since level of service is really a timing mechanism, what our reduction would mean is you just extend the time when you need to fix it. So if we reduce level of service from a C to a D, maybe we wouldn't need to fix it in year 5. Maybe we could wait till year 10. But since we're close to breaking both of those right now, extending it outwards, a level of service D only buys us a few years, especially if large development comes. If large development comes, those are both broken pretty quickly. So that's where the level of service C versus D doesn't change a great deal.
Okay, I'm going to go to the audience. I know there's a couple of you want to talk, so anybody? Well, we'd love to hear from you. Good. Welcome, welcome.
John Freeberg, 918 Robbins Place, Everson. I take it this is just for residential, this chart here.
That compares to only residential.
Residential. My take on this is okay for residential. Because residential does not bring in 1 ounce of sales tax to the city. They use your streets, they use your roads, they use everything there is without any sales tax. I would do a comparison between a commercial in all these three cities, if it's possible, and see where you stand there. Because there's where the rubber hits the road. If I had my choice of the two fees, if I was the city of Ferndale, I would take the sales tax over the impact fees any day. Sales tax will go on for as long as we live here. The impact fees stop. Or you're paid one time, and that's it. There's no more income. So take the sales tax approach to bring in people who are going to make available this extra money, because you need a pipeline of some kind to fund this thing. So sales tax is a real generator right there. Well, impact fees, that had to be looked at. You just have to really be careful. Now, what formula do you use to calculate the traffic impact fees? What formula do you use?
The actual calculation of each individual impact fee would be based on the average PM peak hour trips as expressed in the Institute of Traffic Engineers manual, which is kind of the industry standard. Mm-hmm. So there's a cost per trip. That would be $2,604 is what's proposed. Then depending on the type of use you are, a house generates 1.01 trips per PM peak hour. An apartment building generates 0.68 trips. So we just times one by the other Okay. And that's what we got.
I lost my train of thought here just a second. I had one good question for you. Maybe I can. The level of service you mentioned, what is the difference between the cost impact between C and D or E or whatever? What is the city of Ferndale under right now?
D.
D?
We voted in C.
The level of service is measured basically on the amount of delay or the travel time at different intersections. So along Main Street, we measure level of service, making sure you can get from point A to point B in a certain amount of time. At intersections, it's based on how long you have to wait to go through that intersection. So the difference, a C is you have, I believe, infrequent congestion. Level of service D is you have more frequent congestion. They're right in the middle of A, which is free-flowing, and F, which is constant congestion.
But the impact of the difference, does anyone know that?
There would really be zero difference just because the cost of making the improvement is the same, whether or not it's C or if it's D, where if Main Street breaks, the overpass breaks.
What do you mean by break? What do you mean?
If the level of service is reduced below the adopted, so for instance on Main Street, if people needed to wait 5 minutes to get from point A to B and it drops down to 6 minutes to point A to B, the cost of the improvement to bring it back to the adopted level of service is going to be about the same for level of C versus level of service D, just because you're going to, by just adding on a new lane,
okay.
You now most likely could bump it up even to a B because you've added a whole another third of the capacity there. So because our improvements are like that, there are few improvements that can bring it just back to what it was before. The improvements will likely bring it back to where it was before plus some because you are adding another lane or you are adding a roundabout.
How do you add another lane to the overpass? You have to build a new overpass.
That's why it's 2604.
Yeah, but I mean, you're talking a huge difference between the level of service now then. The level of service will not increase anymore if you have a bottleneck like the bridge or the overpass. You've got a bottleneck both ways. How do you fix that? I mean, that's what I mean by the impacts of that different level. I can remember when the I-5 never went through Seattle. It wasn't any worse then than it is now. And they've got how many lanes going through there? Probably 10 or 15, 20 of them,
I think that's one of the city administrator's points where sometimes growth, while it's beneficial in some way, sales tax for the citizens that are here, the citizens that were in Seattle 50 years ago, they have to wait longer because of all this good growth. And I think that's one of the city administrator's points from time to time is if growth is paying for growth, why do I have to sit in yeah. line for longer?
Yeah.
So, Council, I'm going to stop for a second. Great discussion. Like where it's going. It's an issue that we really got to get going. I guess it didn't work last time. So I'll go with this one. I would beg an extension until 9:30 because we still have the – stormwater fee situation. So I would beg an extension to 9:30.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed.
Aye. Aye.
So,
unless somebody makes another motion like 9:15, which I could support.
are you suggesting that we perhaps move to the reconsideration issue now?
Yeah, but so we got to get this traffic thing, and we better schedule a work session.
Well, I guess that's the question. Do you feel like we could simply bring it back to you in 2 weeks?
It's going back to committee, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, do you want to have another work session on it? Or do you want
to bring it back to committee, get it more done, staff is on the right track.
Okay. I just want to tell you, midway, you're elected to make
big boys and girls decisions, and this is a big decision, mid-May, we run the potential of losing a major developer. Because, it's like, you know what, decide all you want, I'm moving on to another community. Well, he has to have long-term contracts for major retailers.
As I said, I think the staff is moving in the right direction. We run this through the committee. The next committee meetings are
April 27th for the May 2nd meeting.
Can you bring it back to the
first of May?
I'm concerned with the amount of time you have spent. I'm concerned that without a work session, you're going to get to this again, and then you're going to go, I got to go home and have my warm milk and cookies, and I can't go later into the night. So I'm asking, that's fine, you can do another one at 9:15, but I'm asking that you schedule a work session so you get through all of these issues. I know you have developers that still want to talk.
Yeah.
I think they have a right to speak. Okay, so we failed on extending to 9:30.
We're not looking to make a motion tonight on the traffic impact.
No, we're not.
No.
This is like a study session itself.
Correct.
Okay, well, there's some other issues I thought were more timely.
And
than
that's correct.
So,
Councilperson Wexler.
I move to extend to 9:20.
Oh, man. Just couldn't do 9:15, could you?
Do I have a second for that?
Well, we've used up 10 minutes.
I'll second it.
Yeah. Okay, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, motion carries, 9:20.
Fine, but opposed?
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to move off the traffic impact study. We're going to go into the storm.
It's fine with me.
I'm fine.
Sure.
Run. South Country Park. And on these traffic impact fees, I can't even tell you I'm not a supporter or am a supporter. It doesn't even matter anymore because the projects aren't feasible. And I tell your developer friend that. The other thing I tell him is there's no predictability with the council. You guys have raised rates. Mark has just talked again. The other night he talked about the fire district raising stuff 28% on you. And you're talking about the water district, which that's a no-brainer idea. You get a fantastic thing. But it's to offset double-digit increases. And here I'm talking about, this is your numbers again, a 300% increase for single-family traffic. For me, it's different. Some people see a decrease. I'm just saying mine's over 300% increase again overnight, potentially at 2604, the lower rate. 292% increase on multifamily again overnight. It's not incremental. It's not foreseeable. It's not predictable. I could take you back to the comp plan, city goals, second one of 13, reduce sprawl, encourage infill, maintain development standards and transportation impact fee structures that result in lower development costs for infill development. Right in the comp plan, right in the city goals adopted by city council. And again, 300% increase, what we're talking about, 292 multifamily, cost me $138,000. I realize you're sensitive to raising nickel and diamond the general public, $5 a month, $4. I get it. Who wants to do that? You're talking about, I got a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old at home, and you're talking about charging me $1,000 a month increase until my 4-year-old's driving and my 2-year-old's in high school. It's obscene. It's not, you guys should be embarrassed. You're not charging me the money. I think that's what you think. You think this is going to be a cost to the developer. It's not. If I can't pass it on, I'm not paying it, and you're not getting it. So, and I can't pass it on. It's already, the feasibility factor in Ferndale is gone. It's not even there. I just did a project, $17,000 per lot, and I could do phase two. Why would I? To do another 9 lots and lose $10,000 a lot? I mean, what's the point? Right, it's just an exercise. I can go to Linden. I can go in the county. I own property in both. I own about $2 million worth of real estate in Ferndale, and it's a disaster. It's a disaster because you guys think this is money is coming from the development community, and it's not. This would be where my kids or grandkids someday would buy something and live here. It's not going to happen. You're charging a fee to the general public, and if you want developers to come, it doesn't matter what the fee is because they'll compare, they'll make their comparisons and say, Linden is this and Bellingham is this and Ferndale offers this. That's the dollar amount is not a problem because somebody can make a decision before. Is that my 3 minutes? Okay. predictability as in one council member could try to limit increases to like 10, 15, 20% a year, 28% a year. And you could do that and you have predictability. Thanks.
Thanks, David. No, thank you very much. Okay, we're going to roll into G2, the stormwater fee, and I'll go to the person who wants to extend.
If I could, I looked in the council rules procedure, just so you all know. It says here, upon passage of a motion to reconsider, the subject matter is returned to the table anew at the next regular council meeting for any action the council deems advisable. So I just wanted to kind of give you that bookend so you know that should you wish to reconsider, that's what would happen. It would simply go back on the agenda at the next meeting.
Wouldn't that be this meeting? Because this is the meeting.
That actually contradicts Robert's Rules of Order. So.
But this is an ordinance you pass, and that this trumps Robert's Rules.
Yeah. Well, we also passed an ordinance that we follow Robert's Rules of Order.
Yeah.
So.
Not knowing which way this was going to go, I wanted to give you, of course, if reconsideration fails, then we go with what we did before. But I wanted to let you know what happens in the other end as well.
Okay, wonderful. Councilperson Goodrich. Okay, I'd like to make a motion to reconsider the stormwater pond increase. And then if I get a second, then I would like to comment on why.
I'll second.
Okay, Councilperson Goodrich. I went back and I looked through kind of some history of minutes and things on the stormwater pond, and I saw a whole bunch of different things over the years of how the pond would be addressed, how it'd be paid for, how its size it would be. But one thing I noticed that wasn't ever considered was a hybrid approach to paying for it. And after listening to what Councilor Mushler said, I think it was read once before, suggested a penny a cent gas tax. And my thought would be is to bring this back, have the Finance Committee look at a hybrid approach to funding it. We know we can't pay for it all with property tax. We know we can't pay for it all with a penny a cent gas tax. But if we took the gas tax, the property tax, would that then lower the fee that we would have to raise to the person, you know, do a multi-look at funding sources instead of putting it all on the residents who may or may not really be impacting our stormwater issues. So I just thought it would be worth some additional consideration of looking at the hybrid financing approach of the multi-source, and I would just, you know, it may come back that what we did is the best way. I don't know. And if that's the case, then we just move forward and we go with what we did. But if there's a chance to maybe lower some fee, you know, the fee to some of the people that are on fixed incomes that this is going to have a more of an impact on, let's see if we can do that. And that's the purpose for doing this. Further discussion?
Well, yeah, I understand. I hadn't thought about some of those aspects of it. My thought was that, boy, this is a lot of money going to a real narrow focus, and we've got a whole big city that we have to be looking after. So I think it's putting a lot of eggs into one basket and think it's going to be wonderful. And I can see it's being driven by the Main Street project. I'm going, wow, man. And looking at the history of this project, the cost of this project and everything else, I'm just not sold on it at all.
Councilperson Hansen?
Let me react to that first, because it was this council that gave direction to the city staff that if we were going to do phase one, that we would in fact pledge to do phase two. And that came in front of the council, and the council said, let's do phase one. Because at that point, it was essentially return the money that has been granted to you by the funding agencies or get it started. Janice, I remember very clearly, Janice asked if we approved splitting the project into two phases, which we did, because that would allow us to get started on the phase one because the stormwater was solved. It goes into the Shell Ditch / Shell Creek. The reason we couldn't do the whole thing at once was we didn't have a solution for the stormwater issue of the second phase. Having said that, I'm I'm a little bit dismayed because the alternatives, first of all, the gas tax alternative is a vote of the people. So you're going to delay at least that long before you can implement that. And that's assuming that the public would pass it. The property tax, I don't know that, well, first of all, we've all said, and I've heard this from the entire council, that the property tax is something that we sort of hold in reserve, that bank capacity. If we use it up, it doesn't pay for the stormwater pond. And in a hybrid situation, we would use part or all of that plus some other funding source. The only other one I've heard of is the solid waste tax. And I've heard I've been against the increases in the solid waste tax. 12% now. And it's going to be used, and it's already been committed to funding other kinds of projects. So I think we could do it. We could do a hybrid. And sure, if this passes, I'll take a look at it. And I'm a little bit nervous about, we have $4.1 million. If we don't do phase two, we return $4.1 million. Those are the realities. So if you're prepared to say, let's not do phase two of Main Street, then also be prepared, please, to tell us where we're coming up with the $4.1 million to return to the state and the Fed. Because that's the reality.
Councilperson Ferriero?
I, having sat on the Finance Committee and sitting in Council, we've discussed it. I feel that we discussed some options, and I feel like we looked at it well enough, and I still stand behind supporting it before. I mean, there's hard decisions we have to make on Council. There's hard decisions that we're going to have to make. You may not like the decisions that we make, but sometimes you have to go, it is what it is. We've looked at it the best that we can, and we have to move forward with it. So.
Okay, seeing no Councilperson Alpezzi.
Yeah, I'd like to have a little more time to look at some options. I don't think it's going to put the project, again, I'm supportive of the project. I'm not, I don't think anybody's suggesting we return $4.1 million. I think maybe a fresh set of eyes on the, on the numbers and ideas. Councilman Schmuchler came up with a lot of, I thought, I don't want to say, that's right where I'm looking for, plausible options, came up with some options. I'd like to look at how those options would pencil out into this project, and don't see one more set of committee meetings looking at that as detrimental to the overall project. So.
Comment from staff, or do you have any?
Did you estimate for the penny gas tax how much that would bring in?
Between 60 and better times, 100,000 a year. That should, I believe, has to be spent on road maintenance.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. We're going to verify that, but I think the gas tax is limited to streets.
And not capital, just
traffic improvement.
Yeah, traffic improvement, street maintenance. And
pollution control from streets?
No, street maintenance.
We wouldn't be doing the pond if we weren't doing the street.
Right.
Well, streets there before.
Councilperson Goodrich? All I'm asking for is just another look at possible funding. I'm not saying kill the project or anything like that, or kill the pond. Like I said, just looking back in the minutes, at one point in time there was talk of making the pond big enough so other developers could buy into the pond and help pay for the cost of the pond through developers going in there. So that's why I'm looking at it. Just wanted to make sure we cover all our bases before we move ahead. Okay, so the vote would be a vote to put it back on the next council agenda.
I have a question. Go to committee. Yeah. Proceed. Would it have to come back to council before it goes to committee, or would it
our rules just say it goes back on the next council agenda. Now, we could certainly, if we wanted to, run it through committee, because obviously that happens
it's just
before
to put
the
it back
council
on
meeting.
That's what I would like to see, if at all possible within the rules, go to the finance committee before it comes back to the next council meeting.
That would be obvious, but it would be an agenda item on the very next council meeting?
Yeah, yes, it has to be an agenda item on the next council meeting.
Okay, motion.
And it, And to be clear, that if the vote for reconsideration passes, the motion, it goes back to the point where the motion has not been passed yet.
Right.
It essentially voids what you've already done. It puts it back on the agenda. It will be revoted.
Back to the drawing board.
Fully revote on the funding.
Right.
I call the question.
Hand.
Okay, call the questions.
I saw a hand before the call the question.
You are correct. Councilperson Lechler? This is a hard one, because I can add the numbers up here on this puppy. I'm going to vote no on Councilmember Goodridge's motion. It's a hard no to vote for. It's my hope that I think this whole thing has been the lesser of evils, and I really think that we need to move on. I don't like the $10 to $12. I hope that we can revisit that in a future time, but I think it's healthier for us as a city to continue projects as the council decided. I appreciate Councilmember Goodridge bringing this back up. I wish we had voted a different way last time, but I can't support it. The motion tonight.
Okay, motion for you. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Okay, so it goes back.
No,
it's failed.
It
died.
So it's failed.
Okay, next up, mayor reports. Arts Commission has been searching for members. They've been short members.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks to advertising on our Lummi sign, we have two people that applied. Serge Slagle, I don't think you need, everyone knows Serge, and I think everyone knows Rick LaFave. So mayor recommends approval of both of them to the Arts Commission. Brings them to
I don't know.
No.
Oh. It took the Arts Commission 2.5 years to get rid of Mike Hovander. Horrible person to be on that commission. Slagle is another Mike Hovander. He's going to come in there and try and micromanage that thing and run it his way.
Councilperson Alpezzi.
I think I've served as the Arts Commission liaison the last 2 years, and I would completely disagree with that argument, you know, that statement. There has never been any formal mention at any meeting that I'm aware of, or any minutes of any meetings that I'm aware of. So, yeah. That was it.
I'm gonna Councilperson Hansen.
Well, the only question I have is it's fine with me. Rick's on the Planning Commission. There is no rule that says he has a problem with being on two different groups like that. Okay.
Serge's residency, is he inside the city limits?
I checked that. Okay. He is.
I mean, we made provisions that we could have a certain percentage of.
He lives where Freeburg's office.
Correct.
Okay.
North Park County.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. We're going to vote both of them all at the same time, unless you want to do it separately. Can you vote? Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Okay. Motion carries. Mayor proclamation for Earth Day. I won't read it. It's a little short of time, but we're making a proclamation that we support Earth Day, April 22nd. Town hall meeting, 6 p.m. Central.
6 p.m.
Love to have you all there.
That's Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Topic? This coming Wednesday.
Yeah. Yes.
Gang the gangs and bullying at school. FDA has a big meeting Thursday. Churches have announced the season of service. You got all my memo on that. Lots of great ideas. The one church is focusing on Sunday the 22nd. Ferndale Public Market this Saturday, 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock is their official ribbon cutting.
I thought you threw the turnip at 11.
You know, it might be.
Yes.
Get there at 10. Hang around the whole day.
Starts at 10.
The time of the FDA meeting and location?
FDA is 11:30.
I think it's 11:30. And for those of you who aren't aware of, can I just throw that out real quickly? The president of the Main Street Association.
State program coordinator.
Huh?
She's the state program coordinator.
State program coordinator of the Main Street program is going to be here. And it's all of the communities in Buffalo County have been invited. So.
How wonderful. Okay, I'll be off next Thursday, so I'll be out of town. Paul, you're in charge next Thursday. Okay, council comments, reports. quickly, fastly.
Well, I had some discussion, but we ran out of time, so I'll just move it over to committee if we could.
Public Health Neighborhood Services?
Yeah.
Cool. Council Sports, good, that's great. Okay, staff, treasurer?
Nothing.
Okay, city administrator? No. Planning director? No. Clerk? No.
You have 5 full minutes.
Public Works? 5 minutes.
No. Police department? No. Okay, motion to adjourn.
Summit.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
It wasn't dark.
Right?
Made it with 8 seconds.
No problem.
I think you had
the mic.
I know, but I think they wanted